Brian Noonan, who's playing on the radio, baby.
The world can be a scary place sometimes.
You're zipping along in the left-hand lane, and all of a sudden, ha! A couch.
But don't worry. We know someone who can help you survive your week.
Noonan steps in.
He'll help you deal with problems of the modern world.
Yes, because oft times, naked men will show up in your house, shower, and then make eggs.
He has all the answers.
He is one for four.
And when all else fails,
I can do 1,500 jumpy jacks.
So sit back, relax, and allow Brian Noonan to drop some knowledge.
Good job, Noons.
Right here on WGN.
Ho, ho, ho! This is great!
Holy Brian's back!
Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. Very exciting to follow a White Sox big victory, 10-5, over Philadelphia. Now they head out to Detroit. Oh, Detroit comes in. Who wants to play Detroit? That's what I think of Detroit. But listen, we're very happy that the Sox are big winners today. Exciting. Got to listen to the game here on WGN Radio. Then the fine post game with Mark Carmen. Oh, always a pleasure when Mark Carmen does the post games here. So a big win for the Sox, capping off what? Here's the thing. It's been a beautiful weekend in Chicago. Baseball has been great. Lollapalooza, for the first time in recent memory, has not been rained out. There hasn't been a severe weather evacuation of the festival. It seems every year during Lollapalooza, Mother Nature, obviously not a music fan, has decided that she is going to wreak havoc. But this year she took some time off. So Lollapalooza going on, and Ariana Grande headlining tonight at the big festival. What more can be said about little Ariana Grande? She's about a foot and a half tall. She gets carried everywhere she goes because she doesn't like to walk. So that's that. So we will cap off what has been a wonderful weekend in Chicago with the big show. You are always invited to participate. It's more fun when you do. 312-981-7200. That's the phone number. When you call in today, you will not be talking to Cody because this is his annual pilgrimage to Indianapolis to be at Nerdfest. But we are very happy to have Curtis Koch here. You may know Curtis from the Radio Mystery Theater. Old-timey radio show. Sure, we do that. You could do Dave Plyer's show.
Yep.
You do White Sox Weekly.
Yep.
You do everything else that they ask you to
and
do.
The games, yeah. White and Sox and Blackhawks, yep. I'm all over the place here.
So Curtis is everywhere, and yet he has never worked with me, which has been that's been the jewel in his crown that he has never had to work this program, and yet today he is here. So welcome. We're glad you're here.
Glad to be here.
Same rules apply. If you're nice to him, you get to me. That's how it works. If you want to follow us on Facebook and Twitter, it's Brian Noonan Show. You can get a hold of us there. So phone, text, whatever you need to do to get a hold of us. We will talk a little bit more about this wonderful weekend and about Lala. After 4 o'clock, of course, it has been a horrible weekend in this country, and we will touch on what's been going on in it's been a horrible week. Gilroy, California, El Paso, Texas, Dayton, Ohio, right here in Chicago as well. This has not been a good week for us when it comes to mass killings and gun violence. And despite the fact that we don't, we try to have a little bit of fun on Sunday afternoon because, quite frankly, the weekend is wrapping up and we're looking ahead to another work week. We can't just gloss over this. So we'll talk about that. And I want to welcome your calls just to share whatever you're thinking about what's been going on specifically in the last day, not only here in the city, but in Dayton and in El Paso, in the last week, just the overall state, what you're feeling. And we're going to keep it from devolving into a partisan political debate. Because, listen, this is a time for politics, obviously, but yelling and blaming the other side is not really going to do anything. So we'll break that all down. We'll talk about that for a little bit. Then we're going to find out after 5 o'clock. I'm looking forward to this because I spent a lot of time on the road and I spent a lot of time by myself. And there's a lot of things that I really enjoy doing by myself. One of the things I haven't done, and I've been a little bit nervous about, well, mostly because my wife will not allow it, is traveling by myself, especially taking big vacations. Maybe you're one of these people who That's how you travel. It's fantastic. Well, Randy Schaefer is a writer for the Tribune. She had a nice piece about the joys of flying solo, the joys of traveling by yourself. So we'll talk to her about that after 5 o'clock. And after 6 o'clock, we are going to talk to the executive director of the Trotter Project, because we've talked to them before. We'll remind you what the Trotter Project is. And they have a very big event coming up in association with Old Irving Brewing and the Irish American Heritage Center. So we will talk to them after 6 and find out what that is all about. And, and I forgot, I also have to review, we have another Bowtie Theater review at 5:30. That's for the new show, Come From Away. So a lot to get to. Oh, man. Now, Curtis, I know you have been here pretty much 24-7, so you have not had a chance to go to Lollapalooza?
I'm not a big festival guy to begin with.
You know what? I'm not either. And every year on this weekend, I get these pangs like I'm missing out. I'm getting FOMO because I see people posting their pictures from Lollapalooza. I'm hearing, oh, Lala's here, and it's so great. And then I see, you know, most of the people going to Lollapalooza, as I'm driving into the city and I see them walking there in their multicolored headbands and their hippie garb and everything else, they seem to be very young. So I'm like, okay, I know I'm not too old to go to Lollapalooza, but I don't like crowds for the most part.
I don't either. I get claustrophobic.
Yeah, so that it makes me a little hinky about going. And then the other thing, while I enjoy being exposed to new music, like say you and I were sitting somewhere and you say, hey, listen to this, or we're in the car and you go, oh, I want to pop this in for you, I think you'll like this music. I'm not opposed to listening to new music, but when I look at a festival lineup and I don't know anybody, I'm like, oh, well, like I know who Lil Wayne is. And I know who Christina, or what's her name? Who's the little one? Ariana Grande. I know who she is. I know she likes to lick brownies or donuts at a restaurant. I know she's tiny. I don't think the ponytail's real, by the way. And I know she, the sadness with the guy from with Pete Davidson. All that broke up. So that's what I know about Ariana Grande. You could play me 6 songs and go, what of these is Ariana Grande? And I would go, uh-huh. Couldn't pick it out of a lineup. But, so I don't go. Even though I think maybe I want to, but I don't. So I'm watching the news last night, and I guess one of the things, this is a yearly event at Lollapalooza, are people trying to jump the fence. They're trying to get in for free. They're, you know, big swarms of people. They bum rush the fence, and they try to jump over in groups, and then they scatter. And, of course, this year, with the added security because of events that have been happening in the last year or so, and especially in the last week, security was beefed up, they said, at Lollapalooza. And yet, people were still able to hop the fence. And last night, this is the audacity of youth. They were, some of the local TV stations were interviewing people, and one young lady actually had the audacity to say, well, you know, Lollapalooza ought to just expect that. You know, people are going to do. And I was like, wait a minute, hold on. No. Lollapalooza shouldn't expect people to try to cheat them out of money. I mean, yes, it's going to happen, but you can't blame Lollapalooza for these people jumping the fence. This is a choice that people have made that they didn't want to pay the money, and they were going to try to game the system. So my wife and I were talking about this. Like, well, what do they do to these people? Obviously, the police are there. They arrest them. Maybe they drag them. I think what you ought to do, here's my proposal, and it may, listen, if it seems extreme, welcome to America 2020. This is 2019. This is how we're going to do it. It's going to be like a version of the Hunger Games.
Ooh.
So if you jump the fence and they catch you, they bring you to the main stage and they hang you by your feet and they wet you down. And then a big Orwellian voice says, this is what we do to fence jumpers. And then they just start tasing you. And people, everybody sees you, and they lie, you know, they might have a whole string of people hanging by their feet across the stage. Now, I'm not saying they kill them. Obviously, that would be extreme. But a few zaps, and then you send them on their way, all like jittery and whatnot. Maybe that sets an example that we don't, at Lollapalooza, we don't play. Yes, it's very authoritarian. Yes, it's Orwellian in its oppression of the masses. But 99.5% of the masses paid to get in there. And I think if I had paid whatever it is for a 4-day pass for Lollapalooza, I know it's not cheap. I wouldn't mind seeing somebody who tried to hop the fence get tased. That's just me. I'm not good. I don't think I should have to foot the bill because you don't want. Can't you just stand outside the fence and listen? Right? I mean, the music.
Or if you're in an apartment building, you can maybe look over and see people on the stage. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to actually hop the fence, but I guess some people get that weird adrenaline thrill. I did like, too, a lot of times, Curtis, you don't know this because you're not here. I give dirty hippies a hard time. I think the scent of vaping and patchouli oil that is hanging over Grant Park now is a bit oppressive. And a lot of times I will make fun of the dirty hippies. But there was one dirty hippie who made sense, and he agreed with me. He thought that the people who were jumping in should be punished. Now, he didn't get into all the detail that I did, but I think if he and I sat down together, and, you know, he was doing the bong rips or whatever it is the kids do these days, and I was sitting there having a cool beverage, we would reach some sort of common understanding. And I felt, for myself, that I had bridged a gap, even though this dirty hippie kid had no idea who I was. Somehow, we had reached an accord that the cultures and the generations were merging together and that people had finally understood that, you know, it's not old-fashioned to obey the law. It's okay to want people who are breaking the law to be punished.
Uniting to stop the fence jumpers.
These fence jumpers are a scourge. Well, and if we allow them to jump the fences... I've seen a bunch of videos.
The kid, well, the one kid actually didn't have... He had a prosthetic.
Yes.
And he was running, and he actually got in. They actually were able to... He actually did get in.
But they caught him.
They caught him, but he didn't make it past the fencing part.
Right.
There was an officer that stopped
him. And I saw one guy who was a little stocky fellow.
Yeah.
Who didn't have the jump. He didn't have the spring in his step that he thought. And he was like a cat that got caught on the drapes. Because he leapt up to the fence, and he got about halfway up, and then he was just hanging there. And in his mind, you could just hear him going, oh, this didn't work out the way I thought it was going to work out at all. Because there's no, you're done then. You're hanging on the fence. The police are going, what were you trying to do? Nothing. I was just stretching out. I got a lower back issue, and it's good for me to just hang.
Auditioning for Spider-Man.
Yeah, I'm trying. Spider-Man Far From Grant Park, the fifth installment of the Spider-Man universe. All right, so that's Lala. If you were at Lala at some point, I'd love to talk to you and see what I missed. But I don't know how much I actually missed other than a lot of sweat and a lot of vaping. Okay, on the other side, we will talk about the horrible incidents that have been happening in over the last 24 hours. I want to get your thoughts on it. 312-981-7200. Chicago stories told 24/7 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN radio on TuneIn. The news is sponsored by Green Tea Services. It is 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Here's Pam Jones. Thanks, Pam. Brian Noonan, 720 WGN, here until 7 o'clock. And then Karen Conti will be here. A couple people texting. We were talking about these fence jumpers at Lollapalooza right before the news. Some suggestions off the text line that they be banned from not only Lollapalooza, but from Chicago concerts forever. That's harsh, but I like it. I like harsh. And somebody's suggesting maybe they're getting ready for the Area 51 bum rush. Have you heard about that, Curtis? Oh man.
Oh, yeah.
Sure, we got to... That's going to go well. This is what I think is hilarious about that is the guy started this just as a joke, and then all of a sudden all these alien conspiracy people are like, yeah, let's do it. Yeah, that's not going to work out, friends, if you try to storm Area 51. If it's even there, who knows? This might all be... It all may be just... you know, propaganda, hallucination. All right, can you tell I'm stalling a little bit? Only because normally, you know, on this show, we tackle all kinds of things on this show. We talk about anything that's going on, anything that pops into my little head, because that's what we do, and I like to talk to you about it. I like to find out what you're thinking about certain things, and today is no exception. I want to hear what you're thinking today at 312-981-7200. Of course, I am talking about the horrific shootings and mass killings that have happened over the last 24 hours, over the last week. The numbers since the Gilroy mass killing, 32 people have been murdered, 73 injured. That includes 7 people shot last night in Douglas Park here in Chicago. Again, 32 people killed in the last week, 73 people injured. There were more shootings in Chicago. There's shootings all across this country in major metropolitan areas, in small towns. But for 24 hours to have first the shooting in El Paso, where 20 people were killed and 26 were injured, and in Dayton early this morning, where 9 people were killed and 27 people were injured, for us not to talk about that would be, one, I couldn't do it. I mean, it's been all over the news. It's something that I know last night some of my family was over and we were talking about it. And my wife and I have been talking about it. And it's the first thing that a lot of people are talking about. And some people said to me today, hey, can you know, don't talk about it. Just keep things light and have a good time. And we listen to have fun. And listen, we're going to have some fun. I think we've already had fun. Where else are you going to get Hunger Games draconian punishments for fence jumpers? But this is a serious thing. And it's something that I don't like to talk about guns on the air. It's one of those things when I started, they said, listen, if there are two things that are always going to get people enraged, talk about guns or abortion, and the phone lines are going to light up, but it's going to be people who are just want to scream and yell. And you know this as well as I do. In the current climate, you can't really have a civil, rational conversation about guns. Because, unfortunately, over the last 24 hours, I think a lot of people fell into two camps. When they heard about the shootings in El Paso and in Dayton, one group of people said, that's it, we got to get rid of all guns. And the other group said, oh no, here come the liberal bleeding heart snowflakes, they want to take all our guns. So once you've gone into the foxhole of your side, you don't want to poke your head up, you don't want to listen to what other people have to say, and while there are a number of people who, and a lot of people, are willing to have a conversation. But unfortunately, the loudest voices drown those out. And those voices tend to be the ones that fall in one of those camps. And so, you know, how many of you were on social media today and you saw somebody post something about the shooting, one side or another? And then it devolved into these hateful posts. And I got sucked down the wormhole of one thread from a friend of mine. And when I finished reading all these posts, I was like, this was, one, a phenomenal waste of time. Two, it does me no good helping to go through my feelings and filter it out and give more rational thought to what's going on. And three, not one of those people who posted changed anybody's mind. So it's easy to just, let's throw up our hands and forget it. Well, we can't just forget it because it keeps happening. And the other reason we can't throw up our hands, because it does keep happening, and how many of you were really shocked by it? I think the only reason Dayton shocked us as much is because it came in such close proximity to El Paso. When the El Paso shooting happened yesterday, or Friday, I was shocked, one, because I've been at that mall. I've been in that Walmart many times. When I used to work on the road, I spent a lot of time in El Paso. And I knew exactly where that was. And when you hear them say, you can see Mexico from the parking lot, that's not hyperbole. That's not, I can see Russia from my house. That's literally, you stand outside that mall, outside that Walmart, and it's about a half a block from the interstate, Interstate 10, and on the other side of the interstate is Mexico. So El Paso truly is a multinational city. So, one, I was affected because 20 people had been killed. Just going shopping, you know, going for back-to-school supplies. And then more comes out about the shooter and the fact that I had been there. So El Paso, I was like, oh, man, that, you know, like we all did. Oh, man, this is awful. But then the second part of my thought was, well, it's just another one. And that's what's happening. All we keep saying is, well, that's another one. That's another one. So I think we have to look at this in a number of different ways because, hey, America, this is the 21st mass killing in 2019. We're only in August. The 21st. Think about that for a minute. Think about all the people who have been killed in the first 8 months of this year. It's amazing. Now, a lot of people are going to fall back on this being a gun issue. It's all about banning guns. It's all about restricting guns. It's all about the guns. And while guns definitely play a part in this, guns aren't the only thing. But we have to look at guns. We also have to look at the different social issues, the rise of racially motivated hate crimes, the deep division in this country. We have to look at legislation. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We have to look at something else that is, I've been reading about this, about the isolation of individuals in this country and some numbers that are really, really shocking about how isolated some of us feel. and why that isolation then it can lead to anger and can lead to falling in with people who will bolster your beliefs because they're going to give you a message that finally you can belong in some way. So, you know, if you want to jump in, I'd love to have you. 312-981-7200. The other thing I want to touch on is the false focus that I heard a lot today as I was watching all the news programs about this being a mental health issue. And I think while it in part is, to lump it in and use that as an excuse why it can't be solved because, well, we don't have money to solve all the mental health issues, that's not the focus. That shouldn't be the focus because really, let's be honest, there's a lot of things that can be deemed a mental health issue. Any sort of crime, you could say, is a mental health issue. If I'm a shoplifter, well, there's something in my brain that tells me that's okay. And I'm not equating shoplifting with mass killings, obviously. I'm saying that we need to, while we need to focus on mental health in this country, we can't dismiss the mass killings as just a mental health issue. We have to look at that as part of it. Because this is a multi-pronged thing. All right, so let's take a quick break. Then we'll start breaking it down. Guns, legislation, the social implications, all of that. And I want to know basically what you're feeling today. 312-981-7200. When are we going to reach a point in this country where enough is enough? Because I'm tired of the cycle. I'm tired of the violence. Then the thoughts and prayers, then everybody calling for this or that, and then it being gone until the next one. Well, this time, this last 24 hours, didn't give us a lot of time to wait for the next one. El Paso, Dayton, last week Gilroy, last night in Chicago in Douglas Park. It just keeps happening. How's it making you feel? 312-981-7200. I'll talk to you more after this. WGN. All right, once again, the numbers for the last week, horrific. 32 people killed, mass killings in El Paso, Dayton, and the last week in Gilroy. 73 people injured. Those numbers include last night, 7 people shot in Douglas Park right here in Chicago. How is this making you feel? Obviously, these things bother me. But another thing that really bothers me is that we shrug and go on because this cycle continues. 312-981-7200. I would like to hear how you're feeling, how you're dealing with this, where you think we should go as a country. Because again, it's easy to fall into your camp. We gotta ban all guns. No, we gotta make sure that nobody can take our guns. Well, listen, when it comes to guns, first off, I'm not anti-gun. What I am is for common sense gun laws, which most Americans in the latest polls are for. Over 90% of Americans are for universal background checks. Over 60% of Americans are for banning assault weapons. I fall into both of those camps. I don't think that it's irresponsible or a threat to say, listen, some weapons are made just for death. They are made for battle. We don't really need those. Now, that's gonna get people who really are afraid that their guns are going to be taken away. That's going to get them all worked up. Well, okay, that's the way it goes. But you look at a place like Texas, where this El Paso shooting happened, a state with some of the most liberal gun laws around. They have open carry. They have concealed carry. They have campus carry. They have, you know, You can get guns all over in Texas. So if you're going to go on a shooting spree in Texas, you've got to know that there's a good chance that a lot of those people are carrying guns. Now, that would then take away the argument that more guns are going to help this problem. I don't think more guns are going to help. I also don't think it's reasonable, possible, or smart to try to say we're going to ban all guns. So we got to take that issue off the table. We have to talk to our legislators and say, listen, I know there's a lot of money from the NRA. I know a lot of stuff is going on in the back rooms. And yes, the president and the administration has banned bump stocks. So that's one step in the right direction. But we got to hold our representatives accountable for this. There's no reason if more than 90% of Americans want something that it doesn't happen. There's no reason that if a majority of Americans want to ban assault weapons that they should not be seriously looking into this. 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about more than guns, but that's the first part of the equation. Then we're going to get into some social ramifications, too, but I want to hear from you how you're feeling today. Mike's in Chicago. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hi, Brian. It's an interesting topic, and you're right. People do dive into their camps, and they get very entrenched, and it seems very simple to me that you could have mental health laws that if you've assaulted a police officer, if you've assaulted your wife, if you've done violent crimes, you shouldn't be able to have a gun of any kind. And I've often heard people say that, well, guns aren't the issue because if a violent person wants to do violence, they'll find a way to do violence. And I find it really interesting that the very same day as Sandy Hook happened in America, there was an attack in Japan, and the custodian of a school attacked the kindergarten there mm-hmm. with a butcher knife, and he cut over 30 children in an attack. But the interesting thing was, none of those children died. So if you wanted right. to say that violent people will find a way, they will. But if that person in Japan had an assault weapon like the guy in America, all those children would have died.
Well, and so I think, Mike, too, it's a lazy argument to say that for people to say, well, criminals will always find a way. And sure, but then are we supposed to have no laws?
I mean, because the average criminal is going to make a gun in his garage, right?
Right, but there's a law. There's a law against speeding, Mike, that I break every day. I broke it coming into work today. So should we not have any speed limits? Because people are going to speed anyway.
Right.
Should we not have a drinking age? Because how many of us had a beer before we were 21? So listen, kids are going to drink. Let's get rid. That's just a lazy argument. We know that criminals are going to find a way to be criminal. But if we use that as an excuse to not try to set up regulations and laws and parameters, then it's chaos.
Right. Oh, I agree. And then don't forget, the gun business is an enormous business.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep congressmen in their seats, and they can have a congressman unelected. And the power and the money is just, I think that's the actual root of all this. And until that's addressed, nothing really meaningful will happen because the lobbying, the political power, the self-interest of politicians to stay in office.
Money talks,
yeah,
unfortunately.
Yeah.
Mike, I appreciate the call. So, thanks for weighing in. All right, let's get, we got time for a couple more before we get to the break, and then we'll continue after the news. If you're hanging around, Glenn is in Jefferson Park. Hi, Glenn.
It's Gwen. It's okay, Brian.
Oh, hi, Gwen.
Thanks for taking my call. Here's a totally different angle, and you might think of this as a violation of freedom of speech, but these 3/4 of these shootings, there's, like they said, that there's been something posted on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
I think the FBI needs to put in a thing where they can monitor people's Facebooks, and everybody has to register, like, their license so they can catch, like, different red flags or words or something. That's just, I've been thinking about that a long time because a lot of people with these notions before they go off on a rampage are posting things and wherever.
I have a feeling, Gwen, that a lot of that's already being monitored. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I'm sure there are red flags, because if somebody posts, say, threats against the president or threats against a public figure, those those are flagged pretty quickly. Now, today I saw the FBI on all the news shows was urging people, if you see something on somebody's social media, to report that. So I think now we're going to turn into a nation of Gladys Kravitzes, where we're, you know, if I see something on Curtis's Facebook page, which, by the way, I have, and I've already reported it, then we're supposed to take that into our own hands. But I have a feeling, Gwen, that there's some monitoring going on anyway. We just don't know about it. I appreciate the call. All right, let's take a quick break. On the other side of the news, if you're on hold, hang on. We'll talk about this a little more, because there's some other things that we need to talk about, not just the gun angle of this or the gun aspect, but there's a lot of other stuff. So we'll get to all of that on the other side of the news at 720 WGN. Thanks, Pam. Brian Noonan, 720 WGN. After 5 o'clock, the joys of traveling alone. Randy Schaefer writes for the Tribune. She has had a big piece in the paper the other day. Have you traveled alone? Do you want to travel alone? We'll talk to Randy all about that. But right now we are talking about the tragic mass killings over the last 24 hours in El Paso and Dayton. The shooting last night in Douglas Park right here in Chicago. Last week, Gilroy. Again, the numbers are staggering. In the past week alone, 32 people killed, 73 people shot, injured. Those include the number from Douglas Park last night. And I'm sure the number of people shot, the number of people injured, that number is very low because we don't have statistics from all over the country. All right, we've been talking about guns, but I want to know how you feel, what you think we can do. 312-981-7200. We have to look at the other part of this equation, because the guns, if I just laid a gun on the table, it's not doing anything. It has to be used by someone. And that's where the social ramifications of this come in. And now to lump it all into this is a mental health issue, that distracts from the specifics of what makes someone pick up a gun, plot one of these things out, and then go out and commit a mass killing. Because, let's be honest, there are millions of people who are suffering from some sort of mental illness, and they never do anything violent. They suffer by themselves. There's all sorts of things. So we need mental health care in this country. We need more focus on that. But that's not going to end these mass killings. It's just not. We have to look at over the last couple of years, the rise, according to the Department of Homeland Security, according to the FBI, hate-based crimes have risen steadily over the last 3 years. The divisiveness in this country, the use of hate speech has come back to the forefront. Now, I'm not saying this is all the president's fault, but the president needs to take a little bit of responsibility for fanning the flames, because for a long time, people who had nationalistic, anti-Semitic, anti-immigrant, any of those really deep-seated hatreds, they were kind of pushed to the shadows. They were still here. We weren't a perfect society, but they were scorned a little bit. Now, based on some things the president has said, and I'm not blaming the president for all of this, but he needs to take a little bit of responsibility. Now, this afternoon, the president has tweeted out that hate has no place in this country. He is correct. He needs then to follow this up with more policies, more public statements, not just a short tweet. He needs to go out and really, if he believes this, really back this up. Because his words have power. And his words empower people who shouldn't be empowered. If we're to believe what's coming out about the shooter in El Paso, there was a lot of anti-immigrant, racist rantings in his diatribe before he went and committed this act. Part of this is, and this is a shocking statistic, there was a new study done on millennials, and it shows how isolated and how lonely we are as a society. Now, these numbers are for millennials, but the numbers for Gen X and Gen Y are, while a little bit better, not great. 30% of millennials in this study said they always feel lonely. 25% say they have no acquaintances. 22% said they had no friends. 27% said they had no close friends. And 30% said they had no best friends. If those numbers are to be believed, and then you extrapolate them into different generations, and like I said, the percentages are similar, a little bit lower for Generation X and Generation Y than the millennials, but it shows how isolated a society is. And if you're isolated and you're feeling powerless and you're feeling angry and you're full of hate and you go on the internet, you know you can find places on the internet where someone is going to share your views. And those people are going to tell you, hey, guess what? You're not alone. You can be somebody. You need to help us take back this country or whatever their message is. And suddenly you have friends, all in quotes. You have people who understand you, and you're going to act on these thoughts and on these words so that you can belong, so that you can feel that you're part of something. And again, is that all the president's fault? No. But this country is horribly divided. And because of those divides, things like this can happen. They're saying the shooter in Dayton, no evidence that he is, that this was racially motivated or hate motivated. Okay, so this is, we can't make a blanket statement on any of this. But this is all part of the equation, all part of the stuff that needs to be addressed. 312-981-7200. I want to talk to you about how you've been feeling about the last day. Larry's been holding on. He's in Countryside. Hi, Larry.
Hello there. And you made a great point at the very end. And I just wanted to say that, you know, I don't want to ramble on, so you're right. So the majority versus our constitutional rights, they are there to protect us. So you're right. Putting the gun on the table is not going to do any good. William Penn, who founded Pennsylvania, he said that right is right even if everyone's against it. Wrong's wrong even if everyone's for it. Mental health is a problem. If the drones start killing everybody, are we going to start banning those? And it really does start with the parents. We need to get back. My main point is we just need to get back with God. We just need to teach our kids, like you said at the very end, but that you're loved, you're wanted, you have friends. I think that's what's really missing in this country. I know I look at, I watch movies like from the 30s and the 40s, and everybody was a tough guy. That's how it was portrayed. I don't know how society was back then because I was alive back then. But right. We need to just teach everybody that God loves you. And you have to value a life, not that a person walking down the street is just a target for you to shoot. That's the sad part, is we're just leaving God out of our lives.
And I agree with you, Larry. And there's people that, you know, there's people who may not believe in God, but you can still teach decency. It doesn't have to. It can be religious based if that's your belief. But it's a respect for life. It's a respect for each other. And
yep.
And it goes to these numbers about how isolated we are. How many of us don't really talk to our neighbors? We see them, we might say hello, that's okay. And you know, maybe you have a couple neighbors that you watch out for if you know they're going to be gone, things like that. But we're on our phones, we're on our technology, we're locked in our houses. We don't think outside our bubble. And if we don't think outside
right.
our bubble, that's where the problems really come in. Larry, I appreciate you hanging on. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Peggy. She's on the north side. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, Brian. I agree with the guy that came before. I know what it is. I know it's God. And I know something else that you don't know, which is that judgment was coming, that we are in the time of birth pangs when governments die. And what we're seeing is a total breakdown. What you're going to see in the future, it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. But, you know, if you're a parent, you know, you can say you work your ass off for your family.
Right.
I mean, if you're lucky, you have a job you like. But you're not doing this to amass a personal fortune. Somebody told me once, he said, you know, if I weren't a father, I would have been a millionaire. I mean, taking care of your kids is expensive.
Right.
You do it because you love them. And the thing is, if things are tough and if things are going to break down, you're going to make sure your family's okay. And that's what Christians are doing. They're going back to make sure their kids are okay. Because if everything goes down the drain, and it will, you're going to see it. This is just the beginning. It's It's what you call the beginning of birth pangs.
Right, but Peggy, I gotta, and thank you for the call. I gotta take a little issue. There's a lot of Christians who are also for, you know, for all this anti-immigrant and anti-gay, anti-everything in under the envelope of Christianity. Now, there are a lot of fine Christians, but we can't just say, listen, we have to get back to fine Christian values, because there's a lot of people who are really decent human beings who are not Christian. So, you know, I'm all for spirituality. I'm all for religion, if that's your thing. But we can't say the only way we are going to survive is if we believe this one way. Man, oh man. Let's see. 847, are people in roles of leadership need to be reminded or maybe learn for the first time that words have consequences? And while the mass majority may not react like this, it does trip a trigger, obviously, for the law. From the 217, there are unfortunately no hate speech laws in the U.S. Without trampling the First Amendment, this needs to change. That's from Tim in Urbana. You're right on these points from the 847, but an assault weapon is capable of killing, wounding 10 times more victims. That's what I said. I am with the majority of Americans. Over 60% of Americans support a ban on assault weapons. That doesn't mean they're going to come and take your rifle or your handgun or your shotgun or, you know, whatever else you use for personal protection or hunting or sport. Nobody's going to take those. And I don't want them to take those. But I agree, like the majority of Americans, that certain weapons do not need to be on the street. Certain weapons were built and designed for one thing, to kill a lot of people fast. A herd of deer is not going to come into your house. A battalion of soldiers is not going to come into your house. That's where we need some common sense. And I think common sense is what's missing. We'll get to the rest of your calls, some more text. We'll start wrapping this up. On the other side, it's 720 WGN. All right. We've been talking about the horrible events in El Paso. We've been talking about the horrible event in Dayton. Gilroy, what can be done? Somebody very upset that I even had the audacity to say that the president needed to take a little bit of responsibility for the fact that his words could trigger actions. Well, and they threatened to call management. The number 312-981-7200, you can call them in the morning and say that, oh my God, Brian Noonan voiced an opinion on the radio. And they'll go, yeah, duh, that's why we pay him. All right, we've been talking about this. State Rep. Kathleen Wills in the 77th District, which is O'Hare, Maywood, that area. She was in the car listening, and she wanted to jump in. State Rep. Williams, welcome.
Thank you. It's actually Willis.
Willis, I'm sorry.
That's okay, Brian. You know, I just am leaving, actually, a gun safety forum that was taking place in Naperville. And this is just another thing, another place that we see these warnings and we're not doing anything because we're so afraid of impinging on the Second Amendment rights. And I think we need to realize that public safety has to surpass the right to own any type of firearm that you want. I have a right to be safe when I go to Walmart. I have a right to be safe if I go out to the neighborhood watering hole. Those are all things that those rights need to come over beyond that Second Amendment right. There's a way that we can cohabitate together and have your small arms to give you safety in your homes and your hunting weapons, mm-hmm. but we don't need to have assault weapons out there levels of mass destruction.
Let me ask you this then, Representative. There's been numerous studies out, and the latest survey said that over 60% of Americans favor what you just said, banning assault weapons. What is it, other than us cynically saying it's all the money, is there any other reason that Congress is not acting? If more than half of Americans say, listen, we're just like you said, we don't have a problem with people having sporting guns or handguns or, you know, being able to protect themselves, but there's no room for assault weapons on our streets. What's holding us back?
The gun lobby is organized. They are organized. They are loud. They're all full of conspiracy theorists that say if you go and you put a limit on one, you're limiting all. And that's just basically not true. But they are loud, organized, and they have big bucks. And that's the bottom line. I have been fighting this fight in the state of Illinois for 7 years now. I'm lucky that at least in the state of Illinois, we've been able to pass a few common sense, bipartisan gun pieces of legislation. We did a gun dealer licensing bill that, of course, the NRA is taking us to court on right now. But we also passed a really great red flag bill, which we called the Firearm Restraining Order Bill, that gave power to families that saw these concerns that their child or their family member should not have access to a gun right now because they're going through a crisis stage and they might harm themselves or others.
Now, let's...
We're trying to fight through that nationally. I was just, like I said, Congresswoman Underwood said that she's one of the sponsors of this same type of legislation nationally and can't get it called.
So explain this red flag law. All right, so say I have a family member and there's something is going on in their life. What kind of investigation? Because people hear that and they go, wait a minute, all I have to do is call and suddenly, you know, they'll come and take my brother's guns. What kind of investigation goes into that?
You have to go and you have to fill out a form and fill out an affidavit and present it before a court to show that you're... brother-in-law or whoever is a clear and present danger to himself and others. And it's a temporary order, and the person has due process in there, all these things that can protect them, but it's a proactive thing. In the past, only the police officers were able to do it as a result of a conviction or an arrest on something. This allows us to say, you know, he's talking about committing suicide, he's talking about blowing up a school or whatever. These are all things that are red flags. He hasn't done anything, but we need to take that step to keep those guns away from them and suspend their FOID card because we can't allow them to go out and get a gun tomorrow after we take the guns away today.
Talking to State Rep. Kathleen Willis from the 77th District. Let's go back to the gun lobby and being so organized. I've been reading a lot that if you go single-issue voting, you know, the people who are very pro-gun, they will vote single issue. But people who today are very upset and are thinking, listen, we need more common sense gun laws, we need this or that, it's harder to get those people to go out and vote on a single issue. How do you propose changing that mindset so that people who, listen, we've got everybody, no matter what side of this argument you're on, has a lot of things on their mind and a lot of things they're concerned about. But if guns are on the ballot, pro-gun people are really going to come out and vote, and it won't draw out people who may have a differing opinion.
Well, we need to educate the public, and we need to take the crisis on gun violence, taking it away from, and it's so easy to just say the person that did the shooting has a mental health issue,
right,
and putting a stigma on mental health. Well, obviously, there's some mental health issues in there because a normal person wouldn't be doing this. But we can't put a stigma on anybody that has mental health. The reality is, out of the general population that have mental health issues, only 2% are actually violent. But we automatically say those mass shooters are that way. So we need to get that conversation changed. But we also need to get the conversation changed to say, gun violence is a public health issue. It is a public health crisis that affects everybody. So it's not just the people in the Austin neighborhoods. It's not people that are just, you know, well, I don't have anybody that's a gangbanger in my family, so I'm all safe. Well, many of us go shopping to Walmart. Many of us go out for a drink with our family and friends. It affects everybody, and we need to have everybody take a look at it. And at this point, let it be a single-issue vote. We need to get people that are saying, oh, well, there's bigger pictures. This is a picture that's hitting everybody. Yeah. Democrats, Republicans, black, white, Hispanic, Muslims, everybody's getting hit by this. And we have to stop it now.
I do like the fact that today, for maybe the first time, the Justice Department was referring to the shooting in El Paso as domestic terrorism. I think once you start using that label, terrorism, for events like this, it's easy for people to get behind stopping terrorism, you know? So I think maybe even that small bit of nomenclature will help motivate people to get out for single-issue votes.
I couldn't agree stronger with you on it, Brian. I think that's we've got to get people to see that this is homegrown terrorism, that we need to step up and we need to stop it. We need to stop it now. And there's ways of doing it without... without going and confiscating everybody's guns. It needs to be done in a manner that we can respect people that want to have handguns for personal protections, that are legally responsible owners. But we also need to say that we need to keep guns out of certain people's hands, and certain types of guns have no business in private homes.
I believe it. State Rep. Kathleen Willis, I appreciate you jumping on. Thanks for listening, and thanks for calling in.
Thanks for taking me, Brian. Thanks.
We'll talk to you soon. State Rep. Kathleen Willis, 77th District. Roger, you were on the air last night when the Dayton story broke. Now, as a news person, you're used to covering tragedies. But we, as a society, unfortunately, these tragedies are becoming so commonplace that there's almost a shrug. Not that we don't feel sad about it, that we're not saying, oh, my God, that's horrible. But it doesn't linger because we know it's going to happen again. So, you know, why invest all this emotion in something that... Nothing gets done. When you get the report, when it comes across the wire last night, how do you react?
Well, the initial reaction is I got to be honest, I go into my newsman mode. I have to report this because it's news.
Right.
This is not just that it is something unique. If I were to just take the Dayton, Ohio event as a singular event,
But
now it is part of an ongoing story. That has to be given public notice. People have to know about this. I don't care that it happened in Dayton. We have listeners who've been to Dayton, who had family in Dayton, born in Dayton, still
went to school in Dayton, whatever.
There's a connection. We're all connected in the world. And especially here on WGN Radio, where our signal, especially at night, goes so far, and people still listen to us all over the country, that this has to be a news story that I put in my news report. It has to be the number one story. My night started out with those seven shot in Douglas Park.
Right.
I saw that first on my feed, my news feed, and within an hour after that, we started to hear or see, at least on my feed, just initial reports. The very first notice I got was we're getting reports of a shooting in Dayton, Ohio.
Right.
Now, I'm following all the TV networks in addition to everything that I have on my computer that we have access to. None of the networks carried anything. They were still running old reports from yesterday afternoon about El Paso. So now I'm running to local media, which is what we have to do. If we're not getting the details, I have to go into newsperson mode, find out the details so I can report the facts to the public. And those facts were slow in coming. And so that's what I did. I right before the 3 o'clock news, we started to get information that this had happened.
Right.
Unfortunately, it had happened an hour ahead of when we got notice.
Yeah.
So by the time I was reporting it, the situation was over. But then the facts were slow in coming. So that's why you're still hearing about the story. We're still getting details. But that's what I had to do. Was I upset about it? Yes, as a human being, yes, I was affected by it.
Of course we are.
So
we're all affected by it. All right, we're gonna move on. Thank you. If I didn't get to your calls, thank you very much. 708 again, the number for the bosses. You can find it at WGNRadio.com. Call them, tell them that I had an opinion that you disagreed with, and I'll talk to you next Sunday. But that's all right. We are going to switch gears after the news because, as I said, there's a lot of things I like to do alone. This show. No, that's not true. Your mic's still on, Roger. You can laugh.
Okay.
No, there's a lot.
Thank
you were laughing anyway. A lot I like to do by myself. But one thing I've always hesitated to do by myself is travel. Not for business. Business, I would travel by myself all the time. But Randy Schaefer writes for the Tribune. She has had an epiphany about traveling by yourself. She's going to join me. We're going to talk about taking vacations, taking trips by yourself. Is it for you? It might be. We'll find out on the other side of the news. But first, we must do this. 720 WGN.
I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
I have not been everywhere, but I've been a few places. Brian Noonan, 720 WGN. I enjoy traveling. In the last couple of years, we've had the opportunity to go overseas a few times, and it's wonderful. But I went with my wife, or I went with a group, or I've gone with friends. While I do enjoy doing a lot of things alone, I have never thought of taking a vacation alone, and my guest, up to a certain point, felt that way too. Randy Schaefer works for the Chicago Tribune. She has a wonderful piece in today's Tribune. Pick it up. It's only, what, $17 for a hard copy of the Sunday Tribune now. You can also read it online if that's the way you do it. Welcome. Good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Good to see you too, of course.
You shocked me when because you came in with a paper. Because I saw your story, it first was online.
Digital first.
Yes, digital first. And now you've brought it in the actual paper. It's in the real paper today. And you said a Sunday Tribune, this is how out of touch I am, $4.
It's the first one I've ever bought. I usually pick them up at work, but I was off today walking past the CVS. I was like, oh, you know, I should buy a copy of my story.
Yes, your story's in there. That's very cool. All right, so now, you haven't always traveled alone, correct?
No, no.
You started out like most of us. You traveled with friends or family.
Family vacations to Disney, and then just kind of snowballed.
And when did you have the epiphany that, you know what, traveling alone might be better? Was there one trip that would kind of triggered this whole new you?
Yeah, so this is actually the lead of my piece. Was I went to Berlin for my birthday last year, last October, and it was just a really quick, I found a $300 round trip flight. Yes, $300 round trip
flight.
That's
unbelievable.
Right, and it was a budget airline. So I packed my little backpack and I went off for an extended weekend, literally extended weekend, 4 days. I flew there, flew back, got into O'Hare, went straight to work the next day, or straight to work that morning. But yeah, I was sitting at the airport just kind of thinking, wow, this was so much fun. I don't know if I can like break this news to my family that I can't take them on my trips anymore.
So what happened? What was the last bad trip that made you even consider? Because I don't know if I could do it. If I could just say, you know what? I'm going to Berlin for 4 days.
The first jump is the hardest part. But no, I'd taken earlier last year, I'd taken this massive European trip. It was 10 days, 4 countries with an ex-boyfriend. Turns out he cheated on me the week before I went, and you can probably assume the trip was miserable, and I hated it, and I just felt so bad about myself that I was like, I can't travel, I'm not fun, I'm a stick in the mud. And so I just spontaneously booked that flight to Berlin to prove to myself that I could have fun, and I'm a solo travel convert.
I could see that last longer trip was probably, I don't care, even if you were the most fun traveler in the world.
Right, the circumstances leading up to it, yeah.
Wouldn't have been a good trip. All right, so you buy this ticket to Berlin.
Right.
And did you try to get someone to go with you, or did you say, I'm going on this one by myself, come hell or high water?
Well, so my friends kind of make fun of me, because I'll use the Skyscanner app, and I'll find cheap airfare, and I'm like, I'm going to book it now and figure out the details later. So that's very much what I did. I was like, $300 round trip, I'm going to book it, I'll find a friend, and then it was like, the days went by, and then nobody would come, and I was just like, do I eat the cost of this, or do I just like, go by myself? So I went by myself.
So, all right. So you've decided to go by yourself.
Right.
How, because for most of us, like you said, the first jump's the hardest. Explain, you know, you're on the plane over there and you're like, boy, I'm alone. What, and you get off the bus. So how does it unfold?
I was actually surprised at how unstressed I was, because I figured I'd be stressed. Like, I don't speak the language. I don't have a friend to like bounce ideas off of and be like, are we doing this correctly? But then I realized like, there's no one around to judge me. So if I get on the wrong train, literally no one's going to know. And it was so low pressure and low stakes where I was like, my time is mine. There's nobody around to like point and laugh at me. Like nobody even notices me because I'm just such a small presence. And yeah, it was honestly like I was afraid on the entire flight there. But once I got there, I was like, this is actually like so low key and chill.
Does it get, for lack of a better term, does it get kind of lonely? Because part of, in my experience when I travel, part of going to see things is sharing that with the person you're with.
So it does kind of get a little bit lonely in that you'll do some crazy things and you're like, oh my gosh, I wish someone was there to witness this. Yeah. So it's not just like a crazy story like, okay, is Randy lying? But there are other things
Randy,
that make...
Yeah, are you lying?
I swear I'm not. I'm ethical journalist here.
Okay.
But there are other things that make up for it. So, you know, when I was in Berlin, I got to go to the Memorial to the Murdered Jews of the Holocaust, and I was just openly crying. And it was like, if I had a friend that was there with me, I would have like kind of kept that in because, you know, someone's going to judge you. But I felt like being able to express things for myself fully made up for the fact that I was there by myself and I didn't have someone to talk to on trains or like take photos with.
So, and you go now, especially in a country where you don't speak the language, like Berlin, I would think, oh, it's a comfort to have someone there that at least you can talk to. But is there, there's got to be a benefit to the total immersion to just say, it's sink or swim. You've got to figure out a way to, you got to communicate or you're not.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, luckily, most of Europe, everyone speaks English as a second language. So as, you know, as narcissistic as it is very cool to know that you'll be catered to as an American. And there was one point I stayed at a hostel while I was there, and there was me, a Canadian, a Brit, two guys from Greece, a Syrian, a Mexican, all speaking English to each other. And so that is, I feel like a lot of people are a little hesitant to travel by themselves, not knowing the language of the country they're going to. But English really is so prevalent everywhere that it shouldn't be a deterrent.
And this is not a question to belittle any group. But as the father of a daughter, I would be nervous about my daughter, who's 20, going to be 23, traveling by herself.
Oh, you didn't see my dad's text messages when I said, hey, Dad, I'm going to Mexico this weekend by myself.
Okay. So, all right. And that, I don't think that's being sexist.
No, not at all. It's being a parent.
Right. And you worry about your child's safety. I'd still have, if Curtis was my son and he was traveling somewhere by himself, my first thought would be, thank God. My second thought would be, I hope he's safe.
Right.
So how do you, that has to be a concern. How do you, what additional measures do you take to ensure your safety as much as you can?
Well, I'll always log every single trip I take with the U.S. Embassy. So the U.S. Embassy always knows exactly where I am through the Safe Traveler Program, Safe Traveler Enrollment Program.
What is that? Now, this is something new. So explain that to people.
Safe Traveler Enrollment Program, STEP. If you just Google like U.S. Embassy STEP, you can log your trip where you're going. And that way, if anything happens, the U.S. government knows that you are there. And you'll also get emails about, you know, civil riots, unrest, terrorist attacks, anything that might impede your travels.
And this can be for any, not just traveling alone. This
could be every single person ever traveling. Yeah, it's a really good service. I'd recommend it. I'll also share my location with my iPhone with my sister because I'll have service on when I travel.
Okay.
So my sister will always be able to see my little blue dot on my map. I'll send my itinerary to my parents. I'll keep in constant contact, and I'll call them or text them or my sister. A lot of communication just to make sure that I am being safe. And then it's also situational awareness, you know, which anyone living in Chicago has.
Yes, exactly. Anybody who travels anywhere has that. But again, for most of us, there's at least somebody else with you.
Right.
You know? I'm glad. Thank you for not taking offense.
No, not at all.
Because some people, why? You don't think we can take care of ourselves? Sure, I do. I think everybody can take care of
themselves. You just have to take the steps to best do that.
Exactly. I love that State Department tip. I had never heard of that.
Yeah, it's a great tip.
And listen, I'm a target for kidnappers. I could be somewhere and someone would snatch me. I need the government to know where they can come find me.
Right, exactly.
They're not going to come find me. Let's take a quick break. Randy Schaefer is here. She works for the Tribune. Pick up the hard copy. Spend the $4 so you can frame this piece or read it digitally. Flying solo, why traveling alone is the way to go. I want to talk to you about any other concerns, but then there's a lot of benefits to traveling alone. So we want to get into those benefits, and then maybe you have some tips for people who are on the fence. They think that...
Oh, I'll convince them.
Yes,
I'll convince them.
They want to go. So more with Randy on the other side. It's 720 WGN. Randy Schaefer's in the studio with me. Randy is a managing editor or a content editor. What kind of editor? You're some sort of big editor. You're a big deal at the Tribune.
Small.
You're the editor-in-chief?
Small.
What do you do? Publisher?
Maybe one day. No.
But you work at the Tribune.
Yes.
And you wrote a story. Now, it's fun. You didn't write this specifically for the Tribune. How did it end up in today's hard copy of the Trib and on the digital edition of Tribune.com?
So I'm still trying to figure that out. But no, so I actually have a personal blog that I keep. It's just randywithanai.com. And I write about just things that pique my interest, travels and food and dining. And I wrote this little blog post about why I like traveling solo. A coworker happened upon it, and she's like, why aren't you writing for the Tribune? Like, you're employed here. Why isn't this, like...
That's a good question. Why aren't you writing for the Tribune?
And so, like, little old humble me is just kind of like, oh, like, pish-posh, it's just for fun. And she's like, no, that's unacceptable. So she sent the link to our travel editor and was just like, you need to rewrite this and publish it. And that's kind of how it happened.
Wow. Well, congratulations.
Thanks.
That's very cool. All right. So... We talked about some of the concerns being by yourself and not knowing the language. When you went for your first solo trip, which again for anybody just joining us was to Berlin for an extended weekend, which sounds on paper that sounds fantastic. I'm going to jet off
it's
to
fantastic
Berlin.
Fantastic in life as well.
To jet off and just come back. Were there other big concerns? Or even when you went on your second trip, maybe Berlin went smoothly and then it was time for your second solo trip and you went, "Ooh, I didn't think about this last time, but now I'm So, not sure.
So actually, yeah, funny, when my second solo trip, I wasn't nervous about the technicalities because, like, I knew I could fly by myself. I know enough Spanish. I knew I could make my way around Mexico. My biggest concern was, like, what if the first trip was a fluke? What if it was like a one-off fluke and it's not going to be that fun? And I, like, have committed myself to this lifestyle that's really, like, based on fraud. And
wow.
So that was
heavy.
Yeah, that was actually my concern, was nothing technical like kidnapping or like murder, but like, it's not going to be fun.
Well, then, listen, nobody wants to go on a vacation and not have fun.
Right.
So that's
trivial as it sounds, yes.
That's the only reason we leave. Here is to go somewhere to have fun.
Right. You know, what's more fun than Chicago, you know?
Nothing, but, you know, we don't, you know what? I'm going to fly to another country and hopefully I will be in misery for 7 days.
Exactly.
That's my goal, is to suffer, because I can't suffer enough at home. I have to suffer somewhere else. All right. So it was Berlin, then Mexico. Everything is going good. People might still be wondering, well, what makes traveling by yourself so good? What are some of the benefits of traveling solo?
Oh, gosh. Well, for me, I'm such a people person that I have had so much fun just meeting people traveling solo. When you're with a friend, you know, you've got that friend. You're talking to your friend on the plane, on the train, you know, like, you're out and about and you're like, oh, look at that. But if you're by yourself, it's kind of like you either have to make friends or you're just going to be by yourself. And so when you're with a person, you have that crutch. When you're by yourself, it's, you know, like sink or swim. You make friends or you're miserable by yourself.
Now, is that something that, because for some of us, myself included, that would probably be the hardest part for me?
Yeah, and it is hard. The easiest way to do that, I stay in hostels, and a lot of hostels are frequented by solo travelers. So you just kind of head to the bar, cross your fingers, walk up to someone, you're like, where are you from? What are you doing? What have you done? What should I do? And then it kind of goes from there.
Okay. Explain the hostel situation, the hostel kind of setup, because would people hear about that? Is it only for young people traveling solo? If I was to decide to go somewhere solo, can I stay in a hostel as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Hostels don't have an age limit. Granted, a lot of travelers are in their early 20s, but when I went to Berlin, I was 29. I had just turned 29 and I was not the oldest person in the group of people I was hanging out with. I've stayed at hostels before where I've had 50, 60 year olds in my hostel room. So travel and adventure and curiosity, it doesn't have an age limit.
All right. So one of the benefits is then meeting people. You're meeting all kinds of people from all over the world.
Right.
Who do all sorts of cool things, or maybe not cool things, but they're in the same place you are. So you talk to them because it beats talking to yourself.
Yes.
All right. So there's one benefit. I'm guessing another benefit is, and please correct me, the fact that you can do whatever you want.
You can do whatever you want. Yeah. You know, I've taken trips before where a friend, she's wanted to like be in bed at 8 p.m. so she can get up at 6 to say, so you're making the face. And that was the face I was making.
8 p.m.
But if you go by yourself, you know, you can go to bed at 8 p.m.
Sure.
Or you can go to bed at 8 a.m. And it's really entirely up to you. And that's kind of, it's very freeing. You can see what you want. You don't have to be like, oh, you know, so-and-so made me miss seeing this major tourist attraction. Like, if you miss something, you're the only person to blame.
And in that realm, you're also at your own pace. So maybe,
exactly,
you know, you might want to see this museum.
Right.
But I like to go to the museum. I have a very, like, an hour at a museum is my limit. I'll see some galleries. I'll see the big pieces.
And if you're by yourself, you can spend 6 hours and nobody's
six
gonna
minutes.
You know.
And
right,
nobody's
exactly.
Like you said, nobody's going to judge you. I walked in. I was there.
Right, exactly.
Here's
and
selfie.
You can whatever you want at your own pace. And, you know, you can do the same thing multiple times. If something really strikes your fancy, nobody's going to say like, oh, you absolutely cannot go to the Eiffel Tower 3 times. You've already seen it in a day. You can go back day after day and no one's going to say no.
And you're also controlling how much you're spending, right?
Exactly.
Because you can't, your friend isn't going, I have to go here for dinner because it's a, you know, Michelin rated.
And you're just like, I do not have a Michelin budget, my lady.
So you're doing all this on your own. Do you find it easier to find deals traveling by yourself?
So that's actually kind of the one thing that is a little cost prohibitive is, you know, if you're with a friend, you guys can split dinner and, you know, you can try more food for your money. You can split a hotel room versus by yourself where you're like, well, I'm going to have to pay for this all of this out of pocket for all of this food I want to try. I can't share it with someone. I'm going to have to pay for the full Airbnb by myself. Right. So it is, the cost does kind of suck a little bit, but at the same time, you can save money doing other things where, you know, maybe you don't want to even go to the fancy restaurant where you'd have right. to buy the whole dish for yourself. So
now you also said in the piece that a chance, one of the benefits is a chance to live in the moment and self-reflect.
Yes.
So explain that to me.
Well, kind of like we were saying earlier, you know, like I went to the Holocaust Memorial and I was crying. And if I were with a friend, it wouldn't have had that impact. I wouldn't be able to just, you know, sit down at a park and write in my journal. And like if you're with a friend, nobody's going to want to just like hang out at a coffee shop for 3 hours and reflect and, you know, just take in the magnitude of what you're doing and where you're at. And if you're by yourself, you have all of the time in the world to really, you know, take into consideration who you are, where you're at, your surroundings, how they affect you. And it's just a very personal experience.
What was the most moving since you've become a solo traveler? A moment that, besides this one that you've just described, which I'm guessing it was very moving, a moment that affected you the most that you're glad you were by yourself?
Oh, gosh. I think that the most impactful was definitely being at the Berlin Memorial by myself. But there are just so many little moments that you wouldn't have had if you were with someone, you know, just like listening to my iPod while outside of a Mexican cenote, or just sitting in a coffee shop by myself watching people. And, you know, if someone was with you, you'd be talking to them, but you get to sit back and observe and you get to realize like the best and worst parts of humanity are all parading themselves in front of you. And you don't have that if you're with somebody else. And if they're drawing your attention away from the moment at present.
All right, let's, since you brought up the worst in humanity, we've talked about the most impactful moment, a moment where you were like, boy, maybe I shouldn't have come here by myself.
Luckily, knock on wood, is there any wood around here? I need to knock on it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I haven't had one of those yet.
Well, that's
short
good.
Of, yeah, short of just kind of general, like, oh, I'm tired and I'm cranky and I need to find my hostel and I need food right away. I haven't really had a moment where I've been like, oh, this sucks. I was pickpocketed once, okay. But I guess that's just kind of the tax you pay, and I've paid the tax, and now yeah. I can continue.
And that can happen whether you're by yourself or with a huge group.
Right, that's... and that actually happened here in Chicago on the Blue Line on my way back from a trip, ironically enough. So
that doesn't even
exactly
count.
Which is why I said knock on wood. It hasn't really happened yet.
That's a domestic crime.
Exactly.
We can't even put that in the international
crime.
No, I'm not. God forbid. All right, so if I'm on the fence, because there's people listening who are like, oh, Randy paints a pretty good picture. This sounds like something I might want to do, but I'm not sure what... What tips would you give somebody who is really contemplating pulling the trigger on starting to travel by
themselves?
Oh,
just do it. Just book the flight. Just book the flight. And then once you've booked it, it's either giving up the money or going for it. And I don't know, maybe I'm just a cheapskate, but I was like, I'm not giving up the money. I'm going for it. Yeah. So booking it is the hardest part. Once you do that, it's not all easy, but it's all worth it.
Now, going in the hostel, with the hostels, like you said, you're meeting a lot of people who are traveling solo. Mm-hmm. Have you found one destination that seemed much more conducive to people traveling by themselves, or is everything kind of equal?
Well, so I use Hostelworld, which is a website, just hostelworld.com, and you can kind of read about like different types of hostels, if they're party hostels or if they're chill hostels, if they're good for groups, good for solo. And I'll always look at the responses and the reviews and pick the ones that are good for solo travelers. And they usually have bars where you can meet people, or they'll have like guided tours, or they're just very conducive to getting people that are traveling by themselves together in a group for maximum enjoyment.
What about cities that have been more open for being by yourself?
As long as you're good with spending time with yourself, any city is good for a solo traveler.
So what is next? Where are you off to next?
We were talking about this earlier. This is actually my last week at the Tribune this coming week, and I'll be moving to Eastern Europe to serve in the Peace Corps for a few years.
Wow.
So hopefully lots of solo trips when I'm not busy teaching English.
Congratulations. That's a very good thing. And being in Europe, it's... going from country to country is so simple.
They have an amazing public transit, and they've got budget airlines, and it's much more easy to get around Europe than it is here. So hopefully lots more solo travel in my future.
That's very exciting. And now you'll be helping humanity, teaching English in where can you say where you're going?
I'll be in Ukraine.
In Ukraine, very nice. All right, how did your solo travel have any influence on going into the Peace Corps?
Definitely, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense.
Yeah, it was one of those things I always wanted to do, and I guess kind of I thought as I'd get older, I'd kind of settle into things, and no, the adventurous spirit's still there, so we're just going to cave to it, and hopefully it turns out okay.
Well, that's very exciting. And I still, like I said, I'm not in the position. My wife would frown on me traveling by myself. But
as someone without a wife or a husband or children or a house or a dog.
If you're single or, and some couples, they do travel by themselves.
Yeah, and more power to them. Yeah. Maybe I'm just hard to travel with because I don't think I could do that.
You know what? On second thought, I think my wife may welcome me traveling by myself because
out of the house for a few days.
And once we're at a place I'm fine, it's the act of getting to the airport and getting through customs. And
that's the real relationship right there.
And I'm the worst at that. Once we're somewhere.
Yeah, once you're on a lawn in front of the White House or in front of the Eiffel Tower, you've got some cheese and you've got some wine. It's all easy cruising.
Or I'm looking at a map of the underground in London. I'm in my element.
Yeah.
It's that the unknown part.
The setting it up, that's the hard part.
Well, congratulations on the piece.
Thank you.
Good luck in Ukraine.
Thank
teaching
you.
English with the... And good luck on your final week at the Tribune.
Thank
Randy
you so
Schaefer,
much.
pick up the real newspaper. Go out today. You got $4 burning a hole in your pocket. Pick it up, read the story. If you're like, well, you know, I have to go to 7-Eleven to get a paper, that's a hassle. Go online, tribune.com, read Randy's piece, Flying Solo, Why Traveling Alone is the Way to Go. Randy Schaefer, thanks very much for coming in. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you for having me.
We will talk to you again, I hope, from maybe when you come back from Ukraine.
Maybe I'll call in.
You can come, yes, please, Curtis. We'll touch base from Ukraine. If something happens, you can be our source.
Sounds great.
Eastern Europe. That'll be fantastic. All right, on the other side of the news, we are going to have a Bowtie Theater review. I saw another show this week. What did I think of it? I'll tell you. But first, it is 5:30 on 720 WGN. We must head into the newsroom. This report is sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems. Here's Pam Jones.
Welcome to the land where the winters try to kill us, and we said,
we will not be killed.
Welcome to the land where the waters try to drown us, and we said,
we will not be drowned.
We'll still go on.
Welcome to the land where the wind tried to blow,
and we said no.
That morning I dropped my kids off at school and head to the SPCA, where I'm greeted by my other kids, all barking and meowing for breakfast and a belly rub. Not that I'm complaining, I love them. But by the time feeding is done, I got to get back to pick up my human kids. So I take just 1 second for myself, and I'm sitting in my car.
I'm in the library.
This is music from the show Come From Away, which opened the other night at the Cadillac Palace Theater. It has gotten rave reviews around the country, being on the best theater of 2015 list in Los Angeles, on the LA Times, Seattle Times, San Diego Union Tribune, the Times of San Diego. It is a show that I would urge you to see. This is the Bowtie Theater Review. Very exciting. Once again, there are sometimes when you go to the theater and you are moved for whatever reason, whether it's emotional, whether it's comedically, for whatever reason, a play or a show affects you. And this show, Come From Away, really, really affected me. It was one of the most enjoyable nights I've had at the theater. And I've been fortunate to see a lot of shows. If you don't know the story of Come From Away, it is based on a true story. On September 11th, after the attacks, you know that the air travel was stopped over the United States. All U.S. airspace was closed, and a number of flights were forced to land somewhere else. Many of them landed in a small town of Gander, Newfoundland, just as they say, at the edge of the world. Welcome to the Rock. That was part of the song you were listening to. It is an island with very, very few people. It was a town that had about 6,000 people living in there. And then all of a sudden, 7,000 passengers were stranded in that town. It is a story of how these people in Gander came together, and Gander and the surrounding towns came together to help these stranded travelers from all over the world. You know, this is a very small town, but they opened their homes to them. They opened their schools. They got them food. They got them anything they needed, from toothbrushes to there was a very funny exchange of the police chief having to go back to Shoppers, the store there, to get feminine products because they were taking care of all these people. So they just opened their town and embraced these travelers. And so it's a true story, and it's told in flashback, obviously. As you start the show with the first song, it's these local people saying what they were doing. They were on their way. They were having a regular day. And then all of a sudden, things change. And then you meet the travelers, the plane people, who have been on a plane stranded for 28 hours. They don't know what's going on because the captain is not giving them all the information. They've decided not to tell the travelers about the incident in the United States, about the attacks, and about the towers falling. So it's not until they open up a school and these people get to deplane and go to their various places around the area, whether it's Gander in the elementary school, or it's another town close by, or the Salvation Army camp, wherever they were taking these people, that is the time that they finally get to see the carnage that happened on 9/11. And it's hard to say that there's one star of the performance because it's an ensemble cast where everybody plays a lot of parts. And you might think, oh, that's going to be one, confusing. Two, is it going to be convincing when somebody is 1 minute there, you know, the pilot of the American Airlines jet, and the next minute they're somebody in the town, and the next minute they're the local TV reporter or the sheriff, and they're jumping around. And I will tell you, this cast pulls it off flawlessly. It is unbelievable the quickness with which not only they change little aspects of their costume, and most of the time you don't even see it happening, to the changes, some slight, some drastic, in speech patterns or accents or physicality, where I at times throughout the show forgot that this character was just in the last scene as somebody else. And I was like, oh yeah, all they did was put on a hat and a jacket, and now they're a completely different person. It alternates between being unbelievably funny and heartbreaking at the same time. And I think part of the appeal of this show is, one, that it really celebrates how good human beings can be. And in this day and age, we don't see a lot of humanity on a daily basis. A lot of us don't see that. We are bombarded with images of division and rhetoric that gets people fired up, or just people being rude, whether it's in traffic or on the street or where. So to sit for an hour and 40 minutes, which is what this show is, and see people doing good for no other reason than that they're good people. And as they said, you do the same. And I left thinking, would I do the same? Could I be like the people of Gander and open my home to somebody? Could I? Sure, I could give a couple of bucks, or I could send a casserole down, but could I be that good? And that's a question that you're left with as you leave this performance. Could I really be the guy who does something like that? And hopefully the answer is yes. But I think that's the appeal, that we get to see the best. We get to see what we can all aspire to be. And it also taps into your own remembrance of where you were on 9/11. You know, because as some of the characters are revealing their story and their connections to what is still happening in the United States, you'd be hard-pressed not to think for a moment, where were you at these particular times when they're giving out timestamps, you know, September 11th, X o'clock. You remember. And so that adds to the poignancy of the production as well. Now, does that mean that you're sitting there for an hour and 40 minutes and you're bummed out? Absolutely not. As I mentioned, it is hilarious. And that's the beauty of this roller coaster that Come From Away takes you on. That 1 minute you are so high, and the next minute you feel like your heart's being pulled out. And then it goes back to being, oh, and you start to care about all these different characters and wonder what's going to become of them. And yes, there's a couple where you go, eh, I can kind of see what's probably going to happen. But that doesn't take away from the feeling you'll have when those storylines actually get wrapped up. The staging was terrific, very minimal, very, very much a focus on the ensemble, with some great Chicago actors in there. Again, there's nobody who you could say, well, this person is the lead of the show. There's only the woman who plays the captain of the American Airlines flight, kinda, but the woman who runs the Gander Academy, the school where she's kind of a lead, too. And then the mayor's kind of a lead. And then everybody else is coming through. And there's a TV reporter. It's her first day on the job on 9/11. And she's new because she came from an even smaller town than Gander in Newfoundland. And so she's, everybody in there is wonderful. And it shows also how fear can take hold and how bigotry can take hold. And there's a storyline that represents that. And there's love and friendship and how those things last or don't last. But the fact that this was a true story, it actually made me want to go to Newfoundland. I wanted to get on a plane. Maybe I go by myself. I take Randy Schaefer's advice. I go to Newfoundland by myself. I go to Gander. I stand at the edge of the world and look over the cliffs like they do in the show. If you want to feel good, if you want to say, hey, you know what? Humanity is not a lost cause. People are still good in the world. I urge you to go see Come From Away. It was a lot of fun. I mentioned twice so far an hour 40 minutes. The brevity of it is, the length of the show is great. There's no intermission. So it's like an hour 30, hour 40, somewhere in that realm. And it moves really fast. You don't feel like, oh, I wish it had been a little longer to tell me what happened here. Nope. You don't think, oh, I wish it had been shorter because they needed to cut. No. It's the perfect length. The songs are great. The cast is terrific. The fact that it's a true story that some of us, you know, maybe you knew the basic outline of it, but now you'll know the whole story. It is wonderful. I give Come From Away 4 bow ties. You need to go see it now. It is playing through August 18th at the Cadillac Palace Theater, BroadwayInChicago.com for all your tickets. Again, go. Tap into your collective memory. Laugh. Cry. Yes, Curtis, I did. There were a couple tears at one point. I'm not going to lie to you. You know,
I was going to say, I think you could see crying a little bit there. I think everybody in their right mind, if you don't cry at like something like that, yes, and involves 9/11, I don't think you have a soul.
Right. And there was one song in particular that the captain was doing, and it just hit me. And I was like, oh, and again, now I'm not one of those guys who's too macho to say I didn't cry. I didn't sob like a baby, but there were a couple tears. But I was coy with them because my wife always stares at me like I'm a weirdo when I cry. I'm like, you've been married to me for a long time. One, you know I'm a weirdo. Two, you know I cry. But be that as it may, whether you're a weirdo or not, whether you cry or not, you're going to have a wonderful time at the theater. Go see Come From Away now through August 18th. Again, it's at the Cadillac Palace Theater. Couldn't be nicer. Welcome to the Rock. That's the catchphrase. I was expecting Dwayne Johnson. I was not disappointed that he was not in the production. 4 bow ties for Come From Away. All right, let's do this. And then there is more. It's 720. WGN. Thank you, Curtis. Curtis Koch in today. Cody is at Nerdfest. He may be back. He may have been eaten by a dragon. I don't know what happens down there. Roger, you know every year I give Cody a hard time for going to Nerdfest, but we're all nerds in our own way. So.
Well, you know, if it's a once-a-year thing, then he needs his fix.
He does. Well, I don't think he's only a nerd one weekend a year.
Oh,
he's a, no. But
well, he can let it out without being judged.
Well, that's true. Well, no, I judge him.
Well, so, but at the fest.
Well, no, at the fest, he's with like-minded
Yeah,
like-minded
I know. That's
people.
What I'm saying.
And God bless him. Real quick, we were talking about Come From Away, or I was.
Yeah.
Somebody from the 6th Row, I saw it in New York and again last night in Chicago. Both performances were outstanding. And then somebody saying that the Archer bus will get me to Gander. I don't think that's true. I've taken the Archer bus.
Will that
take me to Newfoundland? How far does Archer Avenue go?
I don't think so.
Plus, it might
be the longest road in America. Who
right,
knows?
Because when you're going east on Archer, it ends right here. It ends like near Chinatown. So, that's not going to help me.
If I go west on Archer on the bus, do you think
south,
it'll take
it
me to Crystal?
Southwest.
Oh, well, I was going to say,
so
do you think it'll take me to Crystal Lake, my hometown?
No, Austin, Texas, maybe.
Texas, maybe, okay.
Because Ogden heads southwest. It's a great road. It'll take you to Bolingbrook, maybe. Stop at White Fence Farm. Down, get yourself some chicken. Maybe
Del
Rey's chicken basket.
I'm actually hungry right now, so I might do that.
Roger, did you bring any fried chicken? Curtis is hungry.
I have some sweet and sour chicken.
Do you really?
On brown rice. Yeah.
He had that yesterday.
Wow. So
I have it every
week. So he's offering you like
he's a repeat offender.
3-day-old Chinese food.
No, it's good.
Sure it is.
Yeah.
All right.
It's not old.
I mean, it's edible.
Well,
I don't think that's a good justification. It's edible.
Yeah. Now you sound like me trying to see. My wife is one of those women. If leftovers are more than a couple days, she's right. got to throw them out. And I'm like, it's been less than a week. I can still eat this. She's like, oh, no, you can't. No, that's gross. You know, what am I going to do? Throw it out? No, I'm going to eat it.
No, I bought it Thursday and I made it Friday. I combined the two. I made the rice and then put the chicken in with it. And so my meals are all prepared for the weekend.
All right. So you
just grab and go.
You made it on Friday.
Right.
All right. So
and then I nuke it when I'm here.
Yeah, that's fine. Making it on Friday and eating it Sunday. That's not too old.
No.
Wait, Curtis, what are you,
Curtis
some hoity-toity foodie?
No, I said that was fine.
Farm to table?
Here I am thinking he's...
What, do you need me to slaughter a pig right outside and cook it for you? Is that the game? We can't have anything
that's
been refrigerated?
That's what Bacon Fest
is for. Oh, Bacon Fest is going to be good. Well, I'm going to go home and eat leftovers. That's, you know...
There you go. Why not?
I hated leftovers as a kid. Probably because my dad hated leftovers.
Oh.
Like, we would never have leftovers at home growing up. I don't know where that food went. Either my mom ate it or she repurposed it, but it never came out as leftovers because my dad, he had a thing about leftovers.
The best leftovers are during the holidays.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
When you get the, like for Thanksgiving, you get the turkey, mashed potatoes, all that stuff too.
It's great, but then I got to be honest, after about 4 days, I never want to eat turkey again. That week, I'm all about it. I can't get enough of that stuff.
Yeah.
And then come about Thanksgiving's on Thursday, say by Wednesday, I never want to eat turkey again until Christmas. And then I want to eat turkey again a lunatic.
And that's fine. I think that's fine.
Yeah. All right. What of Thanksgiving dinner could you not get tired of eating the rest of the year?
Oh, well, I mean, it depends. Am I eating it every day? Because I could eat a nice Thanksgiving dinner once a week. I love.
Oh, really?
Okay. Oh, I love all the starch. I love the cranberries. I love the turkey. You know,
the stuffing.
I'm like a dog. I basically do, for the most part, eat the same thing every day. I eat the same thing for breakfast. I eat the same thing for lunch. And I eat a variation on the same theme for dinner, unless we're going out somewhere.
A man of habit?
No, a man who's a lunatic. Because it's like, this is easy. Every day I'm going to have this for lunch.
Right.
And it started when I started initially losing the weight.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Right, so I always ate the same thing because it was easy.
Yeah.
And then and now I've continued that for breakfast and lunch, and then, you know, dinner's every once in a while, dinner's a wild card.
It's not bad, and you feel comfortable doing it.
No, I don't. No, I don't. Everything is a problem.
I do that too. I mean, there was like a year teaching.
You're eating sweet and sour chicken and brown rice for 8 days.
The 3 days I'm here. When I'm home, I don't.
Then you eat white rice.
Yeah.
No.
Or fried rice.
Yeah, nice
fried
purge.
Rice. Gotta go fried rice because I like that hot. I don't like the microwave, the fried
No,
rice.
You know what I actually have like about three times a week is a bagel dog.
I used to love bagel
with
dogs.
Everything on it.
Ooh.
Like if you get a bagel with everything, that's
what... The bagel has everything on it. Not the dog.
No.
Dog is plain inside the bagel.
Right.
Those were my favorite market day things. As a kid.
Oh.
I had market days up until I was in elementary school.
Right. And man, those bagel dogs.
Really?
They had the frozen Ed DeBevick's milkshakes, chocolate shakes.
I was a fan
of those.
Oh, really?
Market days when I was growing up in elementary school. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
They had those. So my mom would order those all the time.
Those market day things, they always look good. It was kind of a... I know it was a fundraiser for schools, so God bless them. But, hey, you know, $78 for 6 bagel dogs. Hey, but you're helping school. I know, but I could... You know, I could go to Jewel, buy myself some bagel dogs, and then maybe kick some cash straight up to the school.
There you go.
You know, what were those Ed DeBevick milkshake? $150?
I have no idea.
For 12 of them?
He didn't pay for it. Mom did.
Mom, I need these milkshakes. Where are the milkshakes, Mom? Curtis, we don't have any more milkshakes. It's not market day until they go, I want a milkshake
Market day doesn't come until next month. I want it now.
Yeah, that's a problem. Plus, you have to have, like, industrial freezers.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody knows I have body parts in those. I can't be filling it up with bagel dogs and frozen, frozen
milkshakes. Where else are you going to store all your Costco surplus?
Exactly. That's the problem. Now we got this new house. The new refrigerator is not as big as the old one. It's one of those side-by-side jobbers.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of the side-by-side refrigerator freezer.
You think there's less space in those?
I do.
Yeah.
And it's probably not, but in my mind, it's less.
Because each door... is thinner. I mean, it's not as wide as the big one. Yeah,
my point exactly. So my freezer may be taller, but I believe one, it's narrower, and I am finding different ways. I think because I'm very close-minded and rigid, I immediately shut down when I see something new like that. But now, as I've been there a few weeks, and I'm kind of experimenting with things, I'm finding I can fit. I have to fit things in differently than I did before. And, Roger, you know me. I love to evolve as a human being. That's Curtis, you don't know me well enough. That is a falsehood. That is 100% wrong. I don't want to evolve. I don't want to be woke. I don't want to change. I just want...
Just leave you in your chair.
Right.
Bring in your breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
I had to get rid of my chair when I moved.
Oh, no,
the big chair? The big chair is
No, gone. You didn't.
Because, well, one... Oh, no. One, it was a big chair, and there was not enough room. Two, about a month before we left, the older dog hopped up there and popped the cushion with her claw. And it was, and to be honest, the big chair was 13 years old and had seen better days.
Mm-hmm.
But like me, I was not just because it was old and dilapidated. I did not want to put it out in the on the curb because I'm next. First it's the chair, then it's me. I see how it goes. Once things get to a certain age and condition in our house, it's got to be donated.
Right.
I'm not going to sit on the dock at Goodwill waiting for somebody to come and claim me. I need to be... So now I don't have a comfortable spot.
Oh, no.
I know. I'm in upheaval.
You got to get a new chair. Get a new recliner.
I'm getting a new recliner. Christmas. That's the
big gift item for Christmas.
Well, that's the that's the plan on paper that maybe we'll get. And maybe we're talking about going Archie and Edith and getting like matching recliners.
We got them.
And that's great.
Yeah.
I've come to terms with the fact that I'm old, and so. If mother and I have to sit in matching recliners, that would be just fine. We can hold our gnarled hands and just hope for the best. No, because maybe that's what we.
I'll give you another tip.
Yeah.
You can have them delivered.
Well, yeah, and they just
snap. No, they'll deliver them, and you just snap the two parts together. Boom, you're done. Seriously.
Oh, the back onto the base.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. What did you think I was going to do? Cobble it together? I'm not.
Well, no. I thought you were going to have.
It's not a Lego chair.
Yeah, really. I'm not going to be. It's not IKEA. I'm not going to be out there with an Allen wrench and a hammer just trying to put my own recliner together.
I ordered it from online. I didn't go to the store. I hate going to furniture stores.
I'm not buying a chair without sitting in it. Are you on acid? Have you been at Lala vaping? There's not a chance that I'm buying a chair that I haven't sat in. Just like there's no chance I'm buying a mattress that I didn't lay on. There's no certain things I need to experience.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm a man. I'm a man of particular needs.
We're finding that out.
Oh, sure. You're just finding that out? We've worked together for over a decade.
I know. Sometimes I'm still amazed.
I don't blame you. I'm amazing. I'm not buying a chair online.
Yeah, well, see, I bought mine first. Uh-huh. Actually, it was a replacement for the old one, and they didn't have that exact chair.
Sure, because it was built in 1928.
I know that. So then I found one was...
Yeah, exactly.
I went and inspected the factory.
That was a chair he was birthed in.
Yeah. So...
What's that stain? None of your business. It's an origin story.
Then I got the new one because it kind of looked close to the old one. And it felt fine when I got it. So then I got a second one for
purchase. You don't want to change any more than I do.
No.
You want a new chair that looks just like your old chair.
Exactly. Why didn't they save one for me when the factory closed down?
I don't know. It's a good question. But we have other questions to ask.
So it's more important.
And I will be asking them of Derek Hall. He is the executive director of the Trotter Project. And Trevor Rose Hamblin is a brewer at Old Irving Brewery. There is a big event coming up for the Trotter Project. So we'll find out all about that on the other side. But first, we must go to the news. Chicago stories told 24/7 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN radio on TuneIn. It is 6 o'clock already with the news. Here he is, Roger Badish. Thank you, Roger. Brian Noonan, 720 WGN, here until 7, then Karen Conti comes in. If you've listened to this show for any amount of time, you know we have talked about the Trotter Project before. We have had them in. They're a wonderful organization. They have a new event coming up next Sunday, the Trotter Project Beer Fest, in cooperation with Trotter Project, obviously, Old Irving Brewing, and so many more. We're going to find out all about it because Derek Hull is here. He is the executive director of the Trotter Project, and Trevor Rose Hamblin is here. Trevor, you are. What's your position with Old Irving Brewing? Are you the brewmaster? Are you just the head honcho? Are you just a guy who looks good in a beard? What's your deal?
All of the above.
All of the above. Very nice.
That's right, yeah.
Very nice. And I told you, I've been to Old Irving a few times, and I've always enjoyed myself there.
Well, thank you so much. I'm glad you enjoy it.
Yeah, first time we were there was on one of those barrel runs. Tours.
Oh yeah, for
and
sure.
Then,
yeah.
And then we've gone back since. So
that's awesome. We love our partnership with them.
Yeah, it's very nice. So Derek, welcome back. It's good to see you. Now, usually when we talk, it's for the Excellence Gala, and which the Trotter Project has been doing for a long time. But before we go further, before we get into all this, tell people what the Trotter Project is.
Sure. Well, thanks for having us on. This is our fifth anniversary for the Trotter Project, and we've been busy. This year alone, we went from 1 week of summer camp down in Englewood to 3 weeks of summer camp with the kiddos.
Wow.
Down there. And, you know, it just made sense for us as we're celebrating our fifth anniversary.
Right.
Let's go to the next big thing. And Trevor and I used to work together at Moto Restaurant.
Okay.
And we thought, hey, we both love beer. We both love food. So let's do the Trotter Project's first annual beer fest together.
And what is the Trotter Project? Because people who know the restaurant world obviously know the name Charlie Trotter.
Right.
We know his legacy. We know all about that. But what is the Trotter Project do?
Sure. So the Trotter Project is Chef Charlie Trotter's enduring legacy of a nonprofit. And what we do in a nutshell is we provide education and mentorship to underserved youth with a passion for the culinary and hospitality industry.
And you also provide scholarships.
We do. We actually had a bunch of students who just graduated this year. As I was mentioning to you before we went on air, I'm feeling very old.
Yeah, congratulations for that. It's got to be exciting because, you know, the project is created and you have these grand ideas and you give these scholarships and you wonder if they'll come to fruition, and obviously they're starting to.
That's true. Yeah, Jefferson Martinez Rodriguez is one of our first graduates out of Kendall College. He's now working at the Chicago Athletic Association.
Wow.
Just down the street here from the studios.
Yeah.
We've got another student, Nia Spencer. She is handy capable, as we like to say, and she just graduated out of New York Culinary School with her associate's degree.
Wow.
And now she wants to go on to her bachelor's, which is great.
So explain this summer camp in Englewood.
Oh, so the summer camp, what we did was we partnered up with the Maria Kappas Center in Englewood. And last year it was 1 week long with 15 students. And we thought, because we're only 5 years old, how could we take it to the next level?
Right.
And so we didn't want to add more students. There's always need.
Right.
But we wanted to make sure that kids were safe, kept off the streets, and really engaged with the culinary and hospitality industry. So we partnered up with our educational institution partners at Washburn Culinary Institute.
Okay.
And we created 3 weeks of summer camp. So
Wow. We
did everything. It was fully intense from food photography. They went up to Lincoln Park to the Green City Market, and they learned to cook everything that they thought they never could. They made homemade pasta from scratch. They
really?
Made potato latkes from scratch. They used the basil and the rosemary from the garden, so zero food mile. And that's another exciting thing that we've done with the Montessori School of Englewood, one of our other educational institutions. A first of its kind, a farm-to-classroom movement, as the Trotter Project likes to say.
Yeah.
And so we've teamed up with the University of Illinois Extension Program and the Master Gardeners. And those Master Gardeners and University of Illinois Extension are in that school's garden with the students, with the faculty, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. And so we've actually literally created a food oasis and a food desert of Englewood.
That's amazing. And that people don't realize that is a huge problem, not only in Chicago, but in major cities across this country where
That's right.
People don't have access to fresh food. They've got, you know, maybe a little store at the corner where they can get, you know, Fritos and pop and stuff, but they can't go into a nice supermarket and get even just lettuce, any sort of vegetable. It's not there.
Right, right. And with the Trotter Project's first annual beer fest, what's so unique about this, it's on Sunday, August 11th at the Irish American Heritage Center.
Right.
Next week, it's going to kick off Charlie Trotter Days around the country, August 11th through the 18th.
Yes, I wanted to get to that because it's a whole week. Now, explain what are these days? How are we celebrating Charlie Trotter's legacy with
so
a week
people can,
of days?
Yeah, so people can go to thetrotterproject.org to find a full list of restaurants participating in the Chicago area as well as around the country. United Airlines as well as getting in the game again this year, our
nice.
Founding corporate sponsor. And so people will be able to participate on the ground and 30,000 feet in the air.
Now, you've talked about, it's always fun. I like to, because airline food, well, it doesn't really exist anymore. But, it's nice to get something quality when you're up there, whether it's a quality beverage or a quality food. Now, also at the first annual, the first annual Trotter Project Beer Fest, some of your graduates will be there, and they are going to be mentored by
some of the chefs.
Correct. That are there. So this is the continuum. This is the timeline that you want. You want these people to get these scholarships. You hope that it's a long career for them.
That's right. We want them engaged with community. We want them giving back, but we also want them to be learning from the seasoned veterans. And I think that's what's perfect about this with the first annual Trotter Project Beer Fest is you have the breweries in the game, you've got a bunch of the chefs, and then you've got the younger generation that are nurtured through education and mentorship by these chefs that are coming in for the Beer Fest next week.
And refresh my memory, that's the students who can be involved with the Trotter Project, is it high school age and up?
Or so anybody can get involved. We're primarily focused right now in Chicago and the west and south sides of the city. However, our scholarships are open to anyone who's interested and has a passion for the culinary and hospitality industry. We've got three different subsets of scholarships.
And again, it's trotterproject.org. You can get all the information on that, what they do and everything. All right, beer fests are probably... You can't swing an empty pint glass around this city every weekend without running into about three or four beer fests. They're very accessible. Is that what you were? Is that what one of the goals of this first annual Trotter Project Beer Fest is, to do something that people love these things?
Absolutely. You know, for us, it's a little bit simpler than that. Trevor and I have worked together in the years past at Moto Restaurant in Fulton Market, and we've always tried to find ways to work together. Old Irving Brewing has always been a big supporter during the Trotter Project's Charlie Trotter days, and with him as the master brewer and behind the, you know, at the helm over there, we thought, how can we take it to the next level?
Yeah.
We thought, let's do a beer fest.
Very nice. And the Irish American Heritage Center, for those who haven't been there, is a fantastic venue. I do a lot of things up there. It's at 4626 North Knox Avenue, so that's where the first annual Trotter Project Beer Fest is going to be happening. All right, Trevor, so you guys have a past. You've worked together, you and Derek, and that's, you know, so now you're going to collaborate. How is it? Because the beer community is very tight-knit. In the years that I've been talking to different brewers, you guys are a tight group. Is it an easy sell to talk to some of these other breweries and say, hey, man, we're doing this at Old Irving with the Trotter Project. Do you want to get involved?
Yeah, actually, the community is very supportive of one another. We share secrets. We share ingredients.
Counterproductive. The secrets
part, so, right?
Yeah. Keep the secrets.
But we do share a lot in our communities. We even have like a Facebook page where we borrow things from one another constantly. So, you know, if I tell them that I've got this amazing thing, an amazing cause happening, everyone rallied.
Yeah.
Pretty much everyone I contacted was in for it, unless they were out of town and couldn't participate.
That's very cool. Let's take a quick break. Then I want to find out more. We're going to tell people more about Old Irving. We're also going to tell them more about the first annual Trotter Project Beer Fest. You can go to eventbrite.com and then enter Trotter Project Beer Fest. That's where you can get your tickets. They're only $35. That includes tastes of beer from these brewers. It includes bites from these fantastic restaurants. All the proceeds are going to the Trotter Project. You'll get to see some of the students who have benefited from the Trotter Project scholarships as they work in conjunction with the restaurateurs. It's going to be a great thing, and it's all at a very, very cool facility, the Irish American Heritage Center. It's next Sunday, August 11th. It starts at 1:30, and it runs till 5, so, you know, Cody and I may have to hit it up before we come to the show, which will make for an interesting couple hours after we've been beer festing, but it's for a great cause. So we'll talk more with Derek Hall, the Executive Director of the Trotter Project, and Trevor Rose Hamblin, Master Brewer and Chief Cook and Bottle Washer. He's the man at Old Irving Brewery. We'll talk more with the guys in just a minute. It's 720 WGN.
In some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer.
Mm-hmm.
This little song
that is true
is more to the point. Roll out.
We could let it roll forever, because I'm sure Trevor Rose Hamblin, the master brewer at Old Irving Brewery, knows all the words to that song. Derek Hull is also here. He's the executive director of the Trotter Project. The first annual Trotter Project Beer Fest is next Sunday, August 11th, at the Irish American Heritage Center. It runs from 1:30 to 5. You get beer tastings from how many breweries are going to be there?
10 total breweries.
10 breweries. You get bites from how many restaurants are going to be there, Derek?
About 10 or so, yeah.
10 restaurants. It is wonderful. It's only 35 $25. Those ticket proceeds go to help the Trotter Project, provide scholarships, provide summer camp, provide all sorts of things for young people who want to get into the culinary industry. You'll see some of the past scholarship winners there who are working with these restaurateurs. It's going to be a great event at the Irish American Heritage Center, 4626 North Knox Avenue. To get tickets, go to eventbrite.com and then put in Trotter Project Beer Fest. You can buy your tickets right there. And you guys, Derek, you had a big stroke of luck. You already made a ton of dough from a contributing sponsor before you even had to pour a beer.
Yeah, before I even walk in the door. We got a great contribution from our presenting sponsor, Helios Construction, right here in Chicago.
Good for them. Thank you, Helios. All right, so Old Irving. How old has Old Irving Brewing been around, Trevor?
We're about to celebrate our third anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
That's very good. So were you always in the beer business, or did you come, a lot of brewers come from somewhere else, but beer has always been their dream? What's your story?
So I would say I've always been a beer drinker, especially because I used to be a chef. So in my past life, where Derek and I met at Moto Restaurant, I was a chef for a time until we did some cross training. Then I became front of the house and then eventually the general manager, and then Hamaro Cantu, the chef's kind of right-hand man.
Okay.
Right there. So that's one of the many reasons that the Trotter Project is so near and dear to my heart.
Right.
I would say that definitely this industry has molded my whole entire existence and has really perpetuated what I've decided to do for the rest of it. So,
and it's an industry that does allow growth from within, right? As you said, you started out in one position and now you've evolved into a totally different kind of guy.
That's correct. Yeah. So I've just kind of taken the lessons that I learned from the kitchen and then put them into how I run a business and also how I make beer.
And what sets Old Irving apart? Because I know, as I mentioned, I've been there, I enjoy it. What do you guys look for? Do you have one style or one way that you kind of approach things?
Well, you know, I would say on the business side, it's definitely more of like a modern business idea where we kind of try to promote our employees, make them feel good, because without them, you know, we have nothing. So we try to make sure that the employees have everything they need. It's an 8,500 square foot space. It's kid friendly, so you'll find some children playing in the back on the bags, as I'm sure you've seen. We have a dining space that's kind of separate from the bar area. We do take food very seriously because of my past and because of my history with Moto and things like that, and going to culinary school and all of that. So we have our own bread baker. Comes in every morning, makes all of our bread fresh.
Nice.
A lot of my beer, I do use some culinary ingredients in some of them, but I also have some that have more of a straightforward approach as well. So
now you brought one in that we're sampling now. Which one is this? This is
Beezer.
Beezer.
Mm-hmm. This is a double dry hop IPA with a Citra and Mosaic, also known as a hazy or a New England IPA.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what sets the New England IPAs apart from the West Coast IPAs?
Sure. A classic West Coast style IPA is going to be a lot more bitter. You're going to get a lot more like pine and resin, and it's very bitter. You know, there's not as much balance. And then you've got the East Coast IPAs, which were started to kind of help people get into IPAs who maybe weren't IPA fans before. There's less bitterness. We don't boil the hops, which actually contributes to all the bitterness.
Okay.
And then we also balance it out with a little bit of sweetness. The haze is just kind of secondary.
Just happens?
It just happens because of the way we do our dry hopping and the fact that we use like 40% wheat.
I'm one of those people. IPA is always too bitter for me, but once people start making the dry hopped ones, it cuts it enough where you still get that hoppiness, but it's not overpoweringly bitter.
Exactly, and that's what we want. Yeah.
So, who else besides Old Irving is Beezer one of the ones you'll be pouring next Sunday at the Beer Fest?
Absolutely, we'll be pouring Beezer, and then we're actually also doing a special beer the day of with Dark Matter Coffee. It's going to be a coffee orchata white stout. A lot of fun. They actually infuse the hops inside the beer into the coffee beans itself, and so we'll be debuting that. And then I did bring a few other beers here, some friends. I've got the Charlatan from my friends at Maplewood.
Okay.
This is more of like an American-style pale ale, but definitely we call it like the Midwest pale ale. It's like not quite as bitter as a West Coast, but still really beautiful and fragrant. And then friends right down the street from us, this is Twisted Hippo, as you can see why they're twisted.
I've heard of Twisted Hippo. It's a beautiful can.
Isn't
somebody,
that cool?
Somebody actually said, oh, you got to talk to Twisted Hippo. So tell me their story.
So Twisted Hippo is a couple, Marilee and Carl Rutherford, just amazing people. They have been very small brewers for a long time. They've been contract brewing, and then they eventually actually got their own standalone brew pub. And this one is actually their farmhouse ale called Old St. Augie's. And there's hippos everywhere when you come into their space. It's very pink and green, and you can actually see the hippo on the can there.
Yeah, it's a great can. Well, the bees are that's I think when brewers started going to cans as opposed to bottles, the art on the labels is phenomenal. It doesn't matter. You walk up and down the aisle at Binny's, or you pick up a four-pack at your local brewery, the art on the labels is terrific.
Yeah, we're always trying to outdo one another. Yeah. So who can stick out more?
And what was the third one?
This one is actually another one of ours. This is called Della. This is a little more approachable. And we sell a ton of it at the pub. It's a Kolsch-style ale.
Okay.
So crisp and clean, and something that you can throw back at a barbecue party.
And so now we're approaching the end of summer, when, as a master brewer, I know you've already planned out what's coming for the fall and winter. What changes or what new brews will be coming to Old Irving?
So every year we celebrate our third anniversary with an Oktoberfest.
Okay.
Usually on the 21st or the 22nd for the whole weekend. And we brew up our Oktoberfest. So I get it in the tanks and I get it lagering for a long time. It's a Märzen, so it's a little bit maltier. So that's a great entry into fall.
Yeah.
And so we'll be doing that. We're going to be doing some stouts, in the, around Christmas time. I release Krampus cookies, which is a barrel aged stout with vanilla and cocoa nibs. And then I add a bunch of other fun ingredients.
I had some of that last year.
Oh yeah. It's it's good.
Not for the faint of heart.
That's correct. Yeah. You can only drink a small amount. Yeah.
Which is fine. You know, you don't have to have a lot of something that's good. Is that good. You can pace yourself.
Yeah. Dark beers are coming. So
you've got, Old Irving is going to be there.
Yep.
Cruz Blanca is going to be there.
Our good friends, yep.
Dark Matter Coffee, because they're doing the in collaboration with you for the White Stout. Mm-hmm. And explain a White Stout, because people think Stout, they go back, you know, most people know Guinness, very dark.
Yep.
And so a White Stout, what can they expect?
Way, way back when in England, actually, stout was any beer that was like over 5%, was considered a stout. So that's the original style. We call it a stout because it has a lot of like the flavor components without having like that roastiness, that chocolate from the dark malts.
Okay.
So it comes out usually a little bit sweeter, less hoppy, usually adjunct forward. So we'll add, you know, like in ours, it's cinnamon and vanilla and things like that. So if you were to close your eyes, you'd might almost think it's an actual stout.
Ah.
So that's kind of the idea. It's just different color.
Yeah. Very nice. Forbidden Root will be there. Eris Brewing and Cider House will be there. Haymarket Pub and Brewing. And the aforementioned Twisted Hippo.
That's correct.
So, we're going to have all these wonderful beers to sample. We have to have, Derek, some sort of food to go with that, because at some point we have to get on the blue line and leave the Irish American Heritage Center after the first annual Trotter Project Beer Fest. What restaurants are going to be there?
So that's the great thing. So a lot of these brew pubs that are with us
also do food.
Are doing the food as well.
So are you doing food as well?
Correct. Yes, we are.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, because I know you guys do food. Cruz Blanca does food.
Twisted Hippo
Haymarket does food. Oh, okay, yeah.
More.
So everybody's bringing their own. Mm-hmm. And are you... Is it a conscious pairing of the food with the beer?
That is correct.
So what will you be pairing with some of your... Or is it a secret?
If it's a, it's a secret.
I don't want to spoil... No spoilers.
Yet to be revealed.
Yet to be revealed. Yeah, chef's working on it.
I was going
to
say, in other words, you haven't thought of it yet.
We have. We're still in the experimental phase. We got a week. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're still trying some stuff out.
When you're doing, in general, without spoiling, when you're doing that, and you... Let's use Beezer as an example. Okay, so you're going to be pouring Beezer at the fest. What aspects of Beezer are you looking to bring out in food, or what food are you trying to see this will complement this aspect of the beer?
Usually when I think about pairings, I think about one of two things. One, where does the India Pale Ale come from? Well, it came from the East India Trading Company and the routes between England and then India.
Okay.
So a lot of the food that would have been paired with this hoppier beer would have been Indian, so spices. Also, it's a little bit sweeter, so I think some spice to complement that sweetness. Mm-hmm. And then also there's a little bit of that like citrus appeal that also complements spiciness. So I would probably just venture right there otherwise. You could also even go with something a little bit lighter, like some kind of salad where you've got some, you know, orange supreme or something like that can really bring out the juiciness. Put some goat cheese on there, and that's going to really stand up to the sweetness of the Beezer too and the citrusiness.
How much of being a brewer and a chef is also being kind of a mad scientist?
A lot of it, yeah.
Because when I talk to brewers and chefs, the things that you guys all come up with, the men and women in this industry, it's, I'm going to use some, you know, I don't know, hibiscus, and I'm going to put it in a beer. Like, what?
Yeah,
I call those, it turns out great.
Yeah, I call those shower thoughts.
Okay.
We even named a beer after the shower thoughts. When you're in the shower, I have a pen and paper in the shower that's waterproof, and I literally take notes in there because that's when the ideas come to me. So yeah,
give people the address for Old Irving.
It's 4419 West Montrose Avenue, okay, Chicago, Illinois.
Very close to the expressway, very close to public transportation. I think there's a bus stop right out front.
Yeah, there's a bus stop, and there's also right off the Montrose Blue Line stop.
So check out Old Irving. But you need to check them out next Sunday, August 11th, at the first annual Trotter Project Beer Fest. It is going to be a wonderful time. Derek, did we miss any of the details? It's August 11th. It's 1:30 to 5 at the Irish American Heritage Center, 4626 North Knox Avenue. Tickets at eventbrite.com. Search Trotter Project Beer Fest. $35. You get beer samples. You get food samples. You get to know that you're helping out a wonderful cause that is giving scholarships to young people who want to go into the culinary industry. Maybe one day they will be working alongside Trevor. Maybe they will become master brewers, or maybe they'll just work somewhere in the restaurant business and have a lovely life and career and then be able to give back to their community. Either way, the Trotter Project is helping people do that. Did we cover it all?
You covered it all. Tasty, all right. Fun with a purpose. Thanks.
Tasty, fun with a purpose. Oh, that's really, I didn't get good. The tagline. That's really good. That's why you're the executive director. Tasty, fun with a purpose, which should be also the tagline for this show. So thank you again to Derek Hall, the executive director of the Trotter Project. Trevor Rose Hamblin is the master brewer and the man at Old Irving Brewing. You can go to Old Irving Brewing. What's your website? OldIrvingBrewing.com?
That is correct.
And go to TrotterProject.org to get all the information on the Trotter Project in general. Eventbrite.com to get tickets to the first annual Trotter Project Beer Fest next Sunday. Don't miss it. If you see Cody and I wandering around, don't call our bosses and tell them, hey, they went on the air after they were at a beer fest. That's not going to work out very well. But, you know, we've done it before. Gentlemen, thank you. Good luck with the event. Derek, I know we will talk again. And Trevor, I know we will be running into each other at various things. So good luck next Sunday. All right, let's go to the newsroom because Roger has been standing by. He's all at Twitter. He's got news that you need to use. And after this, we will talk. We'll talk some hamburgers and other things. Oh, Roger, it wouldn't be a Sunday night if I didn't get to have a little beer. Thanks again to Derek Hull from the Trotter Project and Trevor Rose Hamblin from Old Irving Brewery. Again, if you want to go to the first annual Trotter Project Beer Fest, it is next Sunday at the Irish American Heritage Center. Go to eventbrite.com, Trotter Project Beer Fest, for tickets. That's a good price. $35, you get food and you get beer. And you may get to bump into somebody you know.
Somebody like you?
Roger, you know I don't like to go anywhere where beer is served.
I know.
I like to drink in the basement in the dark. That's where I drink so I can hide my shame from the world. I like to just sit out there and that's it. I'm trying to get used to the city living now, now that I'm a city dweller.
Right.
I'm as well.
Where are you living?
I'm in Lakeview. City?
Lakeview, do you like... You came from the suburbs, did you, Kurtz?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And now, how do you like being in the city?
Well, I have friends down here, so it's nice. It also saves me a lot of time commuting.
Yes.
It's from where I used to live in Crystal Lake to here is about...
That's too far.
Yeah, about 1 hour and 10 with no traffic. With traffic, it could be over 2 hours easily.
Yeah, and there's never no traffic.
I don't know
what's going on in this city. It used to be... Roger, back in the day, remember when there were like 5 cars?
Yeah.
And you could, on the weekends, you could just jet around wherever you want.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it took you 2 minutes to go from the north side to the south side.
I'll tell you what, one time I went from Beverly to Edgewood, and it took me 7 minutes.
But that's now, nothing.
That's nothing. But really? Now, that's a completely false story to me. but now, I don't know what it is. There's always traffic.
Always traffic.
Always. I was going to pick my daughter up at Midway the other night. Her flight got in at 11:20. And the traffic was abominable.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm calling for a ban on half of the drivers. And I'm also calling for a ban on these ride shares. We have to cap them. We have to put a limit on the amount of rideshare cars that can be out there. Just because you have a car doesn't mean you should be a livery service. We have to stop the side hustle. I'm putting a lot of things in play today, Curtis. We're going to
scooters, divvy bikes. What about those?
Oh, Roger, what is my stance on all of that?
Horrible. Shut them down. Throw them out.
Scooters littering the streets. People who don't know how to ride a bike. I'm all for riding bikes. Mm-hmm. I have a bike. I love to ride my bike. You know where I don't like to ride my bike?
Mm-hmm.
All over the city, on busy streets, weaving in and out of cars with no helmets, on a bike. You know, I'm going to rent the bike from Divvy. I haven't been on a bike in 7 years. I think I could still ride a bike. You can't ride a bike, you wobbly numbskull. You're weaving in and out. You don't have any balance. You were drunk the night before. Now you're hungover trying to get to your job at some advertising agency. So you have a messenger bag, and you think you're cool, but you're just some sort of bro who now is on a bike that doesn't fit him. No, stop.
So tell us how you really feel, gone. Brian.
I think I just did. but right now an angry letter coming from all the rideshare companies and Divvy. That would be fine. That would be fine, but... We can't have the
okay.
bike.
It's okay.
No, we can't. It's too many. Too much. Too much on the road. Anyway. Goodness.
Calm down.
No,
deep breath.
Right,
I just want you to make through the rest of the show.
I pulled the cord, Roger.
I'm going to make the rest of the show. I'm fine. Everything's fine. We're unplugged. I just get all crazy. I'm very excited about this news.
What?
Krispy Kreme is opening in Block 37 in the Pedway.
Ooh.
Yes.
Very excited.
If you
go to the Pedway, the only downfall, because we can't have good news without bad news.
Of course.
The universe has to balance itself out.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, this show doesn't revel in good news. I revel in irritants, minor and major irritants, whether real or perceived. Either way, there's an irritant. But this is not really an irritant. So it's going to be in the Pedway. It's going to open in early October. It's going to be a 1,000-square-foot retail shop across from the Starbucks, which is perfect placement because, I'm going to be honest with you, you want a straight-up cup of coffee.
Yeah.
I'm going to give a straight-up cup of coffee edge to Krispy Kreme.
Oh, really? You like the
Their
coffee?
Their coffee is phenomenal.
Wow, I haven't tried it.
Oh, my God. I'm ready to be a 70-year-old man just sitting in a donut shop. Eating a donut and drinking a cup of coffee for like 7 hours. Their coffee is good.
I did not know that.
Trust me, Roger. Listen, we'll go have a cup
of
coffee.
You. I believe
you. Why would I lie to you about coffee?
You wouldn't.
I'm going to lie to you about big things.
Well,
I'm not going to lie to you about coffee. That's why waste a good lie on a cup of coffee?
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to tell you straight up about coffee. And then when it comes to something, like my well-being or your well-being, I'll tell a lie.
Okay, I gotcha. I'm ready for that.
Big falsehood coming up. So it's going to be there. But here's the drawback. They're not going to be making the donuts there. So there won't be the big red hot donuts now light, which is what draws fatties from all over, like mosquitoes.
Myself included.
Myself. Listen, I count myself in that too, Curtis. I don't cast aspersions. I don't judge. I see that light. I'm like, I didn't even want a donut. Now I need a dozen. And with
give me two.
That's a problem. Well, usually, like on Fridays, you can buy, a lot of times they run those promotions.
That's true.
You buy a dozen, you get another dozen free. That's what I need, a second dozen.
Just watch out for Ariana Grande at the Krispy Kreme store.
I tell you what. I'd let Ariana Grande lick my Krispy Kreme. You put that in. Send that to Nick.
Wow.
Maybe she's in town. We had a state rep just listening and calling. What if Ariana's listening?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden she heard that, and she's like, I heard you make that offer. Do you have a Krispy Kreme? I'd like to come on in. That would be terrific. I wouldn't even see her. She's so tiny. She could come right in with a... She could balance the donuts on her head and come lurking in. I just think it was an end table with a ponytail.
The box of the donuts would be bigger than her.
Well...
But she'd have to bring a whole box of donuts in, like a couple of dozen.
Sure, she would. She's not... Well, she wouldn't carry them. She doesn't even walk.
Oh, that's right. She's got her people.
Her people would carry the donuts. Then three people would carry her. She's like some... like Cleopatra. They carry her around on her chair.
Right.
This is true.
On
she's
chair, yeah.
She doesn't want to walk.
Yeah.
I'm like... Come on.
The epitome of laziness.
Are you that much of a diva? I would love to try to pull that someday. I am such a diva, I don't even want to walk. People just go, well, then we'll put
carry
a bullet
me.
In your head right here on the curb and leave you to, you lump. Carry me. Carry me. You know what? You've got one, she's talented. I'll give her that. She's talented.
Yeah.
But nobody's that talented that you can't walk for yourself or that I can't look at you. It's these stars that have people enabling them.
Uh-huh.
So if Ariana Grande wants to come, you know what? She could come over with the Krispy Kremes after I've eaten a dozen without a shirt. My belly is just like a snow globe, just covered in Krispy Kreme frosting specks. And then she could come and clean that off. You want to lick a donut? Lick that donut.
A little
Oh, my God. So my belly would look like the Alps, just snow-covered. Just like people would be lining up to try to climb my Krispy Kreme-coated belly. And then they would, you know, then little Ariana would come in her giant high heels and her big fake ponytail and scurry up there with a, you know, grappling hook and some carabiners to hold on to the side of it.
Where's the reset button?
There is no reset button. Reset button is up here, buried deep inside the cerebellum. That's where it is. But the good news is, what?
That's good news.
What is he doing? How is there more good news? They're going to employ. They're going to employ a bunch of people. They're going to have about 40 people getting new jobs at the Krispy Kreme. So
that is good news.
That is 40 jobs is 40 jobs.
I got to apply.
You want to be a donut? A donut slinger?
Yeah.
I would imagine it would be, well, because here's the thing. It's going to be like the short time that I worked at Ben & Jerry's when we first moved to California.
Mm-hmm.
You love Ben & Jerry's.
Right.
You love Krispy Kreme.
Good ice cream.
Right. But then you work there and you have access to it 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly it loses its magic.
Well, when I worked at the Dairy Queen on Howard Street in Evanston, it didn't lose its magic.
It didn't?
I did it for 2 summers. No, it lost its calories in me because I kept eating so much, I gained too much weight.
All right.
So I loved it, but the scale didn't.
But didn't you get sick of it after?
Oh, gosh, no. Oh, heck no.
I can even teach Roger coming in before the place opens, just laying on his back, opening up. I can't do the swirl in my mouth.
I got to tell you, there's an item that's not on the menu that was taught to me by the owner. It's called a hand sundae.
You don't just fill your hand up.
You fill it up, not with ice cream, but whipped cream, nuts, a little chocolate sprinkles, and just right into your mouth.
That's called having a serious problem. That's called, oh my God, you need intervention.
I know, I did.
That is just
bad. It was horrible. I would eat so much food there.
But you know what? You're not wasting the cups because those are counted.
No, I know.
And you're not wasting the cones because those are counted. That's why you just,
right. I'm going to take a shot of chocolate syrup, and then I'm going to dip parts of my body in that magic shell that aren't supposed to be dipped. You want a chocolate coated?
No. What are you doing? Get back.
How about butterscotch? You like butterscotch better?
No, you freak. Put that away. I've got to, no, you cannot magic coat any part of your body. Now, could you make a hand sundae out of that? Just take your big, scary mitt and dip it in that shell, then bring out your...
No, we wouldn't do that, no.
All right.
No. No, because that's stuff that is served to the public. You don't do that.
Well, not on, you know, you don't tell them in public. But what are they going to know? You dip it in there.
When your back is turned, who knows?
Yikes. Oh, my goodness. So, all right, well, if you see Roger at Krispy Kreme, stay away from the frosting. Because he's going to be... The good news is you won't be working at one where they actually make it. Because then the temptation will be to get on the conveyor belt and go under the shower of glaze and just lay there and come out all glazed like you're some sort of chocolate mummy. And then, you know, then they have to bury you because you've had some sort of diabetic reaction and you're completely dead. As opposed to only partially dead. Who says completely dead? You're completely dead. Oh, no. It's like in Princess Bride. He's just mostly dead.
Right.
No, you'd be completely dead if you went through the Shower of Glaze. Shower of Glaze is the name of my next album.
Oh, really?
Man, it's going to be exciting. Very, very exciting, Shower of Glaze. It was also, I think they also performed at Lala.
Really?
Yeah, they're
on the backstage. Yeah, right.
What instrument did you play on
album? In Shower of Glaze?
Yeah.
I was the road manager. I have no music talent. Yeah, not the roadie, the road manager.
Okay, manager.
Yeah,
okay.
So I lined up the venues, that kind of stuff. I didn't...
he set up the gigs.
Yeah.
Didn't play the electric triangle or anything
like
that?
No, God forbid. I don't dabble.
More cowbell.
All those musicians are on hemp. They're all smoking.
Oh, yeah, they're all the hippies.
Really? Yeah, hemp cats are doing heroin.
A little patchouli in the background.
Yeah,
aroma of patchouli. Yeah.
No, I'm just the guy in the bad shirt with the big cigar going, you want my boys to play here? It's going to cost you this much. So, what am I, Colonel Tom, after being dipped in glaze? How did this happen?
Woo.
What happened here? I don't know.
Oh, my gosh.
I started out as a feel-good story.
Yeah, it was.
About Krispy Kreme.
It still is?
Sure it is. But, you know, Now I can't stop thinking about that curtain of glaze that comes down. Have you ever seen that curtain?
Oh, yeah.
Ever been at Krispy Kreme? Oh, there is nothing more satisfying and repulsive at the same time.
Oh, I think it's all satisfying.
But then you think of just how, because those Krispy Kremes are gone in like two bites.
It's all air.
You can't eat just one. That's the problem. I shouldn't say this because my wife doesn't know.
Uh-oh.
A couple weeks ago, I was driving by a Krispy Kreme, and I went in. I know. I gave in. I'm weak. I'm a weak man. There's no doubt about it. But I just, the light was on, and I was like, I'm getting myself a couple donuts. Because you can't just get one. So you always got to get a couple. Then you get the big cup of coffee. Because to cut the sweetness, it's almost like I would imagine after watching this series Dope on Netflix, and they cut the drugs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I cut the sweetness of the Krispy Kreme with a nice cup of coffee. That way, it's like my weird dietary speedball. I get all jacked up with the sugar, and then I take a hit of coffee, and it levels me out.
I gotcha.
Yeah, wait, and then I'm behind.
Decaf?
No, whole calf.
Oh, okay.
All calf.
Got it. All right.
Because the sugar from there gets me jacked, and then I take the caffeine, and that gets me way jacked, but at least the sweetness in my mouth has been cut by the coffee.
Got it.
So I'm getting a double jolt. Because the sugar jolt wears off pretty quick. It's the caffeine jolt that
just
I need to
inject
keep
it right into your veins.
Oh, man. Then I'm out behind a dumpster begging people for money. You know, I got to get another fix. Oh, no. What are you on? Coke, heroin, Krispy Kreme,
Some guy walks by. Is that a glazed?
What do you got there, man? Anybody got a glaze? Can you hook a brother up? Fix me? I need a fix. All right. We'll stay on food. We'll stay on food. We're going to tell you the favorite fast food hamburger. Think of your own. We will vote. We'll have a little conversation, and then Karen Conti will come in, and then we'll go home. And who knows what's going to happen on that ride. But we will all figure it all out after this, WGN.
It's good to be king, just for a while.
Yes, it is.
To be there.
I heard. I don't know for sure, but I'm guessing it'd be good to be king. It's good to be the jester, too, sometimes. Because you get to get away with all kinds of stuff and just go, hey, it's my job. I'm just being a goof. Do you have a favorite fast food hamburger, Curtis? You seem like a guy who might enjoy a burger, and that's not judgment. I'm the same.
I am a big burger guy. If I had to pick.
You do. That's why I asked you. You have to pick.
If I had to pick, I could go with, I could probably go with a good a Shake Shack.
Ooh, all right.
Shake Shack burger or, if that doesn't count, which I don't know why it wouldn't, but Five Guys.
It's just not on this. It's just not on this survey. Five Guys is on this survey.
I would like,
and I will go with you. Out of all the fast food burgers, Five Guys would be my favorite. Roger Badish, I posed to you the same question.
I've got two favorites.
Oh, how can you have two favorites?
Well, because they're both excellent.
Well, one is a favorite, and the other tell me both.
So, Meatheads.
Okay. I've been to Meatheads once. It was good.
Yeah. And Burger Fi, F-I.
Well, I don't even...
There are very few in the area, they're adding more and more. But it's an excellent burger.
Huh. All right.
Very good.
That one, I've never heard of it. Two, it must be too small because it didn't make this big survey. Market Force Information did a survey of 7,600 Americans, which is no Americans, really. That's
not
that's
enough.
Like, no, it's like me asking two people and saying, Chicago likes this. But it gives you a general kind of go with the flow. Now, here's the thing. We'll start at like number 11. We'll start at the worst. McDonald's was the worst. They were the worst for customer satisfaction. They were the line was the longest. They said the staff was inattentive and rude. So unfortunately, McDonald's came in last. Out of all of this, they had 28% said McDonald's was their favorite hamburger.
I say they always get my order wrong when I order from there.
That was one of the criteria for this whole survey, too, mm-hmm. is getting orders wrong. And the one thing, the thing that always bothers me about McDonald's, and I every once in a while, every few months, I get a hankering for a Big Mac. There's just something. I don't know why all of a sudden my mouth starts to water, and I'm like, I gotta get that Big Mac. But the fries are always cold. Always.
Oh, see, mine are always hot. Like, super hot.
That's what I want. And somebody said, well, what you got to do, here's the life hack. Is that what the kids say, Curtis? The life hack?
Yeah, the life hack.
Yeah, order them without salt, and they have to make them fresh. I'm like, yeah, but that, I want my fries to have salt.
Yeah.
Because my blood pressure isn't high enough. I need to jack that up. So, you know, a little more salt is going to do it. Anyway, McDonald's came in last. First, the favorite hamburger chain, fast food hamburger chain, according to this study, In-N-Out Burger.
I never had it.
I lived in Los Angeles for a number of years. I've had In-N-Out Burger quite a few times. I think part of the allure of In-N-Out Burger is that you can't get it everywhere. That's why people rate it
it's
so
exclusive.
High. Yes. Now, it's not a bad burger. It's a fine burger, and they do the fresh-cut fries, and the fries are good, and, you know, they've built this mystique of having a menu that's not on the menu, this mm-hmm. super secret, oh, you could get cannibal style or carnivore style or veggie style, whatever. It was okay. But when I lived in L.A., I preferred Fat Burger over In-N-Out Burger. And I know that's going to make people crazy. Oh, how could you say that? Well, I said it, and I stand by it. So In-N-Out was number one. Number two was the one Curtis and I both voted for, Five Guys. Five Guys makes a fine burger. Then you go into, who was number three? Number three was Culver's, the butter burger.
Culver's is good, too.
Culver's does a lot of things good.
Mm-hmm.
Their pork tenderloin sandwich is a fine sandwich.
Reuben sandwich.
Oh, man. Look at us. The custard?
Yeah.
I'm getting hungry. Roger, call out. Get something delivered.
Oh, sure. Let me get right on that.
You run out to Culver's.
Yeah.
Number three was Culver's. Number four. Now, number four is another regional restaurant. Whataburger. You ever been to a Whataburger?
I have not.
They're down in, like, Texas, New Mexico, Nevada, that area.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, Whataburger makes a pretty good burger.
All right.
A lot of their stuff, especially when you're in New Mexico, comes with green chilies on it. And that's a fine addition to a burger. They're big. The Whataburger would remind you somewhat of a Whopper, only a little better quality.
Okay.
Just a little bit. And so I'm down with Whataburger. That's a fine burger. Then you go to number five was number five. Where's my numbers? I didn't even write. Smashburger.
Never heard of it.
I've seen them around. I haven't been to a Smashburger. It's kind of like Meatheads, I think, where they're making the burgers fresh right there, so that's that. Then you go to, Red Robin, to me, doesn't qualify as fast food. Because you got to go in, and you got to sit down, you got to tip a waitress. That's not, that's not fast food. But then it's Red Robin. Steak and Shake, again, not really fast food.
Well, Steak and Shake is pretty fast for fast.
Well, it's fast, but you still got to go in and sit down.
Yeah, but I mean, you could get in and out of there in 10 minutes if there's nobody there.
Well, listen, I don't know how you eat. I like to chew my food. I'm a fan of what the doctors like to call digestion, Curtis. I'm not a vacuum.
I'm a fan of digestion,
I like to
too.
Use my mandibles. I like to chew it up.